Coming up on Boston Public Radio, the Pope surprises yet again, saying the church has become obsessed with abortion, gay marriage, and contraception. Some cheers, some catcalls. We'll ask a UNH professor who studies such things if America's Catholic bishops will allow anything to change. Then Kelly Crossley, she's got vehicular things on her mind, after which she'll go under the radar. And what grows twice as much in one day as the biggest movie opening ever? That's right, Grand Theft Auto V. We'll talk to a gaming expert about who plays and why.
Then Emily Rooney on the mayor's race, plus her world-famous Emily's List of oddball, quirky observations. And then our weekly news quiz, a battle of the meteorologists, NECN's Matt Noyes and Boston.com's David Epstein. We'll also throw in a weekend forecast. All that coming up on Boston Public Radio 89.7 WGBH. Rowdy, I am Marjorie Egan. You're listening to 89.7 Boston Public Radio, WGBH.
Hey there, Marjorie.
Hey, Jim.
You know, before we get started, I just want to say both we met in the lobby last night to go to the Taste of WGBH Food and Wine Festival. It was, and last night was the Chef's Gala, 25 spectacular chefs, including Jody Adams and Brooke Fosica, who was with us yesterday from Four Seasons and obviously Rialto and Trade. It was unbelievable. It sold out this year and today and tomorrow's events, too.
Food was unbelievable.
Don't wait
food
next
was
year.
Unbelievable. Food,
and other than Brooke telling us that we called him Bruce by mistake twice on air.
I know.
Everything went.
I know. It was amazing how much food you can manage to put in, Jim.
It's
amazing. You really made a beeline around those.
Well, speaking of amazing, I wasn't going to bring this up and then we'll move on. As you walk in, you get a program for the Taste of WGBH Food and Wine Festival. But Marjorie and I both take one. Then you get a little, I don't know if it's swag, you get a little cute little notebook.
Yes.
Then there's a table of about 300 wine glasses. I walk over and take a wine glass. Marjorie says, I can't take a wine glass home. I just don't think it's... I said, Marjorie, it's not to take home. It's to drink the wine in. So
yeah.
The beginning was a little rocky.
A little slow on the uptake there.
But
I'm
telling you,
souvenir.
Plan for a year in advance. It was a terrific event. GBH supporters were there in droves.
It was great fun.
It was a wonderful night.
I hope you got enough to eat, Jim.
I did indeed, and to drink. It was a perfect event. Good for the planners here, too. Getting to the businesses at hand, I'm sure you know that Pope Francis has electrified both the Catholic world and the world beyond. In an interview with American Magazine, the Pope said the Roman Catholic Church has become, his word, obsessed with gay marriage, contraception, and abortion. He said the church should emphasize compassion and mercy instead of what he also called small-minded rules. We're going to get your thoughts on this in a second at 877-301-8970. But first, we're joined in Studio 3 for the first time. We're glad to meet her. To go over what reverberations this is having in the Catholic community and beyond, Michelle Dillon is a professor of sociology. She's the department chair at the University of New Hampshire. It's finally great to meet you in person, Michelle.
I know.
Thanks, Jim.
After
happy to be here.
After all this time on the phone. So what is the significance of what the Pope has just done?
Well, I think it's tremendously significant. I mean, it was just so stunning to hear a church official, never mind the Pope, actually use that language that Jim just mentioned. You know, this is what ordinary people, a lot of ordinary Catholics say about the church, that it's obsessed with contraception and sexual issues in general, gay rights, abortion. But to hear it coming from the Pope himself, and in the context of a much broader interview, it was really quite stunning. And I think it's just sort of disrupting a lot of people's ideas about the church. And now, of course, getting people excited about how this is going to play out over the next while.
But what does it mean? Does it mean that indeed we're going to hear less of this obsessiveness here in the United States? There's a lot of very conservative bishops and talk about what the Pope has said we should be talking about more, which is, you know, poor issues and mercy and love and all those touchy-feely kinds of things? Or is it just he says it over there in Rome and that's it?
Well, that's a good question. Of course, the bishops have their own control over their own dioceses, and they, in a large sense, can choose to talk about what they want to talk about. Nonetheless, the fact that the Pope is saying these things, I think, is sending a very clear message to bishops that, you know, they really do need to shift attention away from the overemphasis on these issues and to spend much more dedicated time talking about issues of social justice, poverty, immigration reform.
You know, when you say the bishops, my understanding is the Council of Bishops is yet to speak, and I don't know if any American bishop has spoken since this interview was published. But the New York Times has a piece, or is it the Globe? One of the papers this morning has a piece from Bishop Thomas Tobin of Providence, a quote in which prior to yesterday's announcement, he actually openly criticized the Pope for failing to speak out on abortion. So the assumption I make as a non-Catholic, but as a close observer of this, is there's probably some significant level of dissatisfaction, since a lot of the American bishops have exhibited the same obsession that he's criticizing, no?
Oh, absolutely. And I would say an additional surprise was the combining together of contraception, same-sex marriage, and abortion, mm-hmm. because even though they're all about issues of personal sexual morality, for decades now, really going back to before and certainly after Roe v. Wade, so that's we're talking now about over 40 years, the Catholic bishops have always given, and Catholic Church teaching, John Paul II in particular, have always given a very special elevated status to the moral issue of abortion and sort of separated, which it really is, from issues of contraception or other issues got to do with sexual relations. And so just to hear the Pope refer to all three together, I think would have been very disconcerting to a lot of Catholic bishops, both in the US and elsewhere.
Will any of them, I don't want to use the word courage, will any of them have the blank in the days ahead to say we respectfully disagree with the Holy Father? I mean, can any of them do that? I mean, I understand practice is different from speech, but can they say those words?
Well, they can, but I think it would be very unusual for them to do so. I think what they will emphasize is that church teaching on any of these issues hasn't changed, right? As the Pope himself said, that he's as a son of the church, the church teaching is clear and he understands that, but we don't have to keep talking about it all the time. So
it's more tonal.
It's absolutely tonal, but tone does matter, sure. Particularly, you know, for Catholics who for really the last several decades, and I think these debates have become more amplified in the last few years over, certainly here in the US, with Obamacare and the contraception mandate, which, you know, contraception was really a moot issue for American Catholics and for, you know, Catholic priests and bishops have said very little about it in the wake of the, you know, the 60s, the 70s, in the wake of Humanae Vitae. So it really became a new issue again a couple of years ago on account of the healthcare debate. And then, of course, same-sex marriage because of the shifts in the culture and in laws around the country.
And don't forget, roughly a month ago on a plane back, from Brazil?
Yeah,
back
coming
to Rome,
back from World Youth Day.
Where
yes.
The Pope made the comment about his gays. He says, tell me, when God looks at a gay person, does he endorse the existence of this person with love or reject and condemn this person? So this is all...
Yes, and in the larger interview, I mean, it's a lengthy interview that covered a lot of topics, and just the whole tone of the Pope is really quite stunning and I would say very inspirational to a lot of people, because he emphasizes the importance of context and of seeing the person in the context of everyday life and the struggles, the practical and ongoing struggles that people have, and the need for mercy, not mercy in, you know, you're a sinner necessarily and go to confession, but really to try to understand the trials that people have and how they deal mm-hmm. with them. It's very open.
We're talking with Michelle Dillon. She's a professor of sociology and department chair at the University of New Hampshire about the startling discussion or statement from the Pope that the church has become obsessed with sexual matters. You know all about this, so I'm going to ask you, because I think a lot of people, even pro-choice people, understand why the church is where it is on abortion. They get that part. What I think a lot of people don't get...
Well, you should explain for those who are not... And the reason be because they have to support life. They
right. No matter what you think about abortion, it's the killing issue and just the beginning of life, the end of life. Right. They look at it as a seamless kind of situation, no euthanasia either at the end of life. But I think many people think that the contraception issue is set in stone. But explain to people, this was sort of a surprise. They were moving back in the 60s to say contraception is okay. Mm-hmm. And then the Pope, I think it was Paul VI, backtracked. Explain that to people.
Well, you know, back in 1968, the famous encyclical Humanae Vitae on human life was issued by Paul VI. And it really caught the world, and I think especially American Catholics, by surprise, because prior to that, the Pope had commissioned a papal commission to study birth control issues. And the widespread expectation was, and again, this was sort of fueled also by the wake of Vatican II, which emphasized personal conscience, religious freedom, that the church would say, in the context of family life and in the context of marriage, the use of artificial contraception can be morally fine.
Right.
That was really the widespread expectation. And of course, when Paul VI issued Humanae Vitae, it said the opposite. It said that, in fact, it wanted to reaffirm church teaching that it's morally wrong.
But wasn't one of the reasons that he did that was because some of the cardinals that were more conservative said, you're going to look like a wimp and a wuss if you don't do this, so you've got to... I mean, it wasn't like... I guess the reason I'm asking this is to me, it's possible, because this is not a set-in-stone kind of deal, contraception, that this Pope could be moving toward a place where we'll be re-looking again at okaying contraception for married Catholics.
Right, certainly. And I mean, most Catholics in the wake of Vatican, of Humanae Vitae, interpret it to mean, well, they'll make up their own minds.
Exactly.
They'll use the pill or other forms of birth control and they'll continue to be practicing Catholics. And that really marked a watershed in how American Catholics construed their relationship to Rome and to the bishop's authority in general. But I think, as you said at the beginning, Catholics do make it, not just Catholics, but others as well, make a distinction between contraception and abortion, because abortion just is a more morally freighted issue, whether you're so-called pro-choice or so-called pro-life. So certainly, but I don't think even that, you know, most Catholics don't really give second thought to what the bishops say about contraception.
No, they don't.
And so there was a lot of surprise 2 years ago when the bishops and Cardinal Egan, you know, in particular, as president of the Conference of Catholic Bishops, was leading the charge against the contraception mandate in the Obamacare legislation. It was like as if all these Catholics would be mortally and morally offended if they actually were to use contraception, when, of course, they've been using it in large, you know, numbers for decades.
Well, they wink, nod from their parish priest in many cases.
Well,
as
I mean,
well,
it's a moot issue. It's well documented. The priests, people don't confess to being using contraception,
don't.
And they have stopped doing that for years. I mean, and that, you know, there was a pastoral solution. And in fact, in the larger interview with Francis, he talks about the value of confession. He says it's not a torture chamber. But for a lot of Catholics, they've stopped going to confession because that's how they see it, as a torture chamber, because you're telling all these sins. I'm using contraception. I'm in a gay relationship. What, I'm divorced. And he's saying it's where you go to seek grace and forgiveness. You know, so it's a much more positive understanding of it as a sacrament. So
that's the voice of Michelle Dillon, head of the sociology department at UNH, and she studies exactly these kinds of issues. If you want to weigh in at 877-301-8970, Catholics and non-Catholics invited to respond, because every time I talk to Michelle, when the Pope does something unbelievable, when it's washing the prisoners' feet, when it's challenging the political infrastructure, when he traveled to Brazil about their opulence with the World Game or the Olympics or whatever it was, and the soccer thing, the World Cup, while he's in their country, I think the ramifications for non-Catholics, for the world beyond Roman Catholics, is huge as well. But does this cause, let's stay in America, in the United States, does this cause some sort of schism between the conservatives and the, I guess, the more liberal wing of Catholicism here?
Well, I think schism is far too strong a word to use. I mean, there's deep divisions among American Catholics, but the large majority are what you might call liberal or moderate Catholics. Mm. I mean, there's a very narrow minority who really are in lockstep with church teaching on all of the issues that we've talked about. So that's really a small minority. They're often sometimes more vocal, perhaps, and certainly they have the support of most of the bishops, and certainly in the collective statements of the bishops, they're
so
on the
side. So it's sort of that. It's the person in the pews versus
the person. Most of the people in the pews are basically moderate Catholics who are using contraception, who are in favor of same-sex marriage, and certainly of gay rights in general. Certainly there's more variation on abortion, but for the most part, you know, they're not in lockstep with official church teaching and have not been so for many decades.
Have you read all 12,000 words of this thing?
Yes, I finished reading it this morning.
I've only read in reports, and I am going to read it this weekend, but all three of us remarked that the fact that the Pope uses the word obsessed is unbelievable. he says to the interviewer, who's a Jesuit, from what I understand, he uses the term, you know, people think I'm an ultra-conservative, and he uses the term a right-winger.
Yes.
He says, I am not a right-winger. Right. The accessibility of the guy's comments are... I really found to be stunned. We found out, for example, that his favorite movie, which I have seen, you saw, I think, too, Michelle, years
ago,
La Strada. Why is that? La Strada by Fellini. I think it was in the 50s or the 60s, about this girl who's sold to some traveling entertainer, played brilliantly, I should say, by Anthony Quinn, a typical Fellini thing. But you learn so much about what's inside the head of this unbelievably powerful man. It is just, I really can't wait to read it. 877-301-8970. We'd like to hear your thoughts about these revelations. And I think pretty radical statements by the Pope released. And by the way, the interviews were in August, just released in the last day or so.
Well, also, if you are a Catholic or a lapsed Catholic, half the people you know that are Catholics are lapsed Catholics now, does this make you look twice at the Church? If you're not a Catholic, does it restore a little respect to the Church? Because as the Pope said in his interview, he worried about the moral authority of the Church falling like a house of cards. To many of us, it's already fallen. fallen, yes, because while they're obsessed with matters sexual, they've been dragging their heels and rather disgraceful on the matters sexual involving priests and children and teenagers in the sex scandal. In fact, the bishop from Providence, Tobin, that's been Thomas Tobin, that was criticizing the Pope in his latest statements, has been criticized by sexual survivors groups as not being as upfront as he should be. So you wonder whether this is a step forward to kind of restoring that respectability. What do you think?
Well, I think it has to be a step forward just because of the whole tone and language and the openness that really just permeates all of his interview. Nonetheless, of course, church teaching hasn't changed. And for example, there's a short paragraph on women. It didn't actually get too much emphasis.
No, it didn't. And but so, tell people about that.
Well, no, I think it's interesting because the interviewer asks him, well, what about the role and the place of women in the church? And he speaks very beautifully that, of course, woman is essential to the church. And he talks about Mary and the need to develop a new theology of woman. Now, it's not clear what exactly a new theology of woman would be and whether to what extent it would open the way to have women having full participation in the church, for example, as ordained priests. So, you know, he's open, certainly he's collegial. If some of the top women theologians that we have here in the US and elsewhere are part of those consultations to develop a theology of woman, that might be promising. But I think a lot of people, going to your point about those who are indifferent or lapsed, so-called lapsed Catholics, you know, they won't necessarily want to return to the church until they see major steps in terms of change.
You know, we were chastised yesterday by a caller. I don't know what were we talking about. Oh, we were talking about the shootings, and was it the shootings where we made some dark humor,
right?
And we were criticized. I'm about to do it again on a pretty serious topic. If people do not read Andy Borowitz, the most brilliant satirist online at the Borowitz Report, here's today's post. Scalia, meaning Antonin Scalia, the Supreme Court Justice, formed search committee for new pope. Here's the beginning. Saying he was, quote, sorry it had come to this, Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia said today he was forming an independent search committee to select a pope. The visibly upset jurist appeared at a press conference with the sole other member, the newly formed search committee, Justice Clarence Thomas. When Thomas was asked to comment, of course, as always, he had no comment. 877-301-8970. We'll get to your calls in a second.
Yeah, one thing before we do go to the calls, and we're here with Michelle Dillon from UNH to take your calls as well. The tone is so crucial because you're right. I mean, the doctrines haven't changed. But in the interview, here's the Pope talking about gay issues. Mm-hmm. Quote, a person once asked me in a provocative manner if I approved of homosexuality. I replied, this is still the Pope talking, with another question. Tell me, when God looks at a gay person, does he endorse the existence of this person with love or reject and condemn this person? Right. We must always consider the person. That, to me, is a night and day kind mm-hmm. of tonal shift in approach toward homosexuality, which has been pretty much, hate the sin, love the sinner kind of thing. But we're talking about hating the sin.
Right.
I mean, it's hard for me to get around both of those things without looking so judgmental. This is a different perspective. Anyway, 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. Paul from Milton, you're on with me and Jim and Michelle Dillon from UNH.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Me, Jim, and the professor. If it matters, I'm a practicing Catholic. Just want to set the ground for that. And I think what the Pope said is really biblically based. There's the gospel of the woman at the well. talk about provocative. He was presented. He didn't bring up, if you read the gospel, he didn't bring that up himself. He's presented with a woman who's a prostitute by some men. And basically he turns to them and says, okay, guys, you want to stone her? The first one who hasn't had sex with her, you can start. And, of course, they all walk away. And I think the Pope is kind of picking up on that in the gospel, it appears that Jesus did not initiate that conversation. He assumes that that has gone on for a millennium and would continue and has continued, will continue. But there's more to living than that, and this. So I think what the Pope has said now is right in line with that. If you know the conservative wing of the party if Antonin Scalia, he'll probably tie in the Pope with Obamacare in the next Borowitz piece. But I guess maybe I'm not too far wrong. You know, I mean, it is very political.
That wasn't the woman at the well, though. That was a different story. The woman at the well was... that's a different one. The adulteress you're talking about. The woman at the well was, give me the water, you won't be thirsty again.
Using the two of them.
It's okay.
Paul, thank you for the
call.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is totally, as the Pope himself says, this is what's the first thing that Jesus says. I mean, he says this in the larger interview, and that is that you show love, you show compassion, you see the real person, the whole person. And he says we want to move away from a church that's associated with narrow legalistic rules and move towards seeing the person in the true pastoral context.
You know, Michelle Dillon, before we get back to the call, when he was selected, if there was a poll, which I wish there could have been, or you could talk to the selectors, all the cardinals, what percentage of them would have expected this out of Francis as Pope? And would they have voted for him if they thought this was coming?
I certainly can't answer those questions.
Well, I mean, what's your conjecture?
But what I would say is, what I always think is exciting about a new Pope being elected is that, as Francis himself says, the church evolves, and the church, it's not some monolithic tradition, and the church is grounded in the lived experience of people. He said all of these things, repeated them. And so every time there's a new Pope, it opens up the possibility for change. Clearly the church, there's a lot of ferment going on in the church. There's a lot of what he would call socially wounded people in the church. And so I think it gives, when you have a new Pope, it's an opportunity, particularly for someone like him who is so pastorally grounded, unlike Benedict, who is much more theologically immersed, I think to open up and to have change.
Yeah, but I guess where I'm going is, I understand, getting back to what Paul from Milton said,
assuming
it was a party as opposed to, let's assume there were stump speeches, and Francis got up, a soon-to-be Pope Francis got up and said, hey, gentlemen, I want you to know, several months after I take over, or right after I take over, I'm going to wash a prisoner's feet, including a woman. I'm going to talk about our obsession with all these matters sexual. I'm serious. Would he have been elected?
Well, I don't think he had to say that. I think all of his fellow cardinal peers knew that he was very closely living the life with the people, the poor people in Buenos Aires.
Sure.
So he wasn't a man of high airs and graces. He was a man who was with the poor. And so they can't be too surprised, because, of course, concern for the poor is a core piece of the Catholic tradition. And the Catholic bishops here in the U.S. used to be much more involved in articulating those demands.
And they've
demands,
been so
and
silent.
More silent.
They
relatively
have been practically, yes.
So in that sense, I don't think too many people are too surprised because they know he has a very human touch.
And you know what else I think is really significant about this too? You know, that it's been kind of a depressing future, because you looked at Benedict and the idea that he really wanted a smaller, purer church. You were either on the bandwagon or you weren't. He didn't really care, you know, about, and this is a much more magnanimous, open, come back in kind of perspective from this
Do your
Pope.
Friends who've left the church, Marjorie, I'm serious, you broached this a minute ago, friends of yours who have left the church because of the sex abuse scandal and those kinds of things, how many of them are going to say, I'm going to give this a second look? Are any?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't done enough of a calling around yet
to be able to arrive to
it. Yes, I will. But I think this is going to be a very exciting moment for gay Catholics who are going to say, hey, we're getting the respect that we haven't gotten before. There's that whole group of Dignity that has the masses every Sunday in Boston for gay Catholics, because they were thrown out of a Catholic church. They couldn't even have their masses in a Catholic church. They're in an Episcopal church, a Protestant church, have their masses. So you wonder how things may turn around for Dignity. Will they now be able to
have their masses? Woman who runs it.
Right after that
plain press conference, and I don't want to put words in her mouth, but she was thrilled, I think, is a fair statement. Let's go to Joanne. You're in Southbridge. You're on with Michelle Dillon, me, and Marjorie. Hi, Joanne.
Well, hello. I want to say that the Pope is a breath of fresh air. I was born and raised Catholic. Actually, I was born in 1959 to an unwed mother, and was born in an unwed mother's Catholic home. And my parents' marriage was not recognized, and I would go to church. And there was a sense of shame for me. And I stopped being a practicing Catholic at some point and went to other churches. But I would certainly consider going back to the Catholic Church. I think this man is walking the walk and talking the talk as far as the Bible goes. I mean, if you look in the New Testament and Jesus, and he's very hopeful.
You got it. Joanne, well said.
It. thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Well, the Pope said, you know, you have to heal the wounds. And he repeated that in the interview. You have to heal the wounds, and you begin to heal the wounds by starting from the ground up. And so to your callers and to others, I mean, that's a very positive message.
Well, Michelle Dillon, you're an expert on all of these things, and you would certainly know better than I. But when you look at the New Testament, Christ spends a lot of time making fun of the rules, saying you guys are obsessed with the rules. And this was, of course, Judaism back because he was Jewish, obviously. He criticized everybody's obsession with what you can't do on the Sabbath, what you can eat, what you can't eat, all that kind of stuff. And, of course, he hung around with prostitutes and tax collectors and all the ostracized people. So that's what was always, I think, for a lot of people so weird about the Catholic Church and the modern day's obsession with the rules, because the guy that started it was saying, don't obsess over rules.
Right. And of course, you have to have rules. I mean, it's a large organization. It's a bureaucratic structure. Rules are necessary, but rules are not the reason for its being. And I think this is what the Pope is repeating, is that there are other agendas, there are other objectives. The spiritual and pastoral needs of the Catholics themselves are far more important than what rules are being followed or not being followed.
And you didn't see previous popes hanging around with many prostitutes and outcasts.
Well,
either,
not that we know of.
That's Linda, true. Hadn't thought of that.
Michelle Dillon said that, to be clear. No. Linda, you're in Milton and you're on with Michelle Dillon and the two of us. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
Excellent.
I'm really grateful that you have this program today.
Thank you.
I read the whole interview, and I hope anybody who's interested will go to America.com, which is the Jesuit magazine, which is the one that helped translate this. It was given in Italian, but it actually was translated at America. So they're partially involved with why it's so readable. Anyway, I think what was just said about healing the wounds, one of the things that Francis says is that when people are so hurting and so wounded, as many people are in the church today, they if they go to a doctor, you heal the wounds first, then you ask them, how's their cholesterol? Can we get their blood gases? He said, you start with the wounds. You have mercy. You deal with first things first. And you connect with what is the message of Christianity. I would just like to have one little phrase out of it that's so amazing. When he talked about being too legalistic, he says, if the Christian is a legalist, if he wants everything clear and safe, then he will find nothing in the tradition. Tradition and memory of the past must help us to have courage to be open up to new areas of God. God is in every person's life. God is in everyone's life, even if the life of a person has been a disaster, even if it is destroyed by vices, drugs, or anything else. God is in this person's life. You must try to seek God in every human life. Although the life of a person is a land full of thorns and weeds, there is always a space in which the good seed can grow. Mm-hmm. You have to trust God. So, I mean, he talks to the interviewer about the fact, the interviewer says, are you an optimist? He said, I think I'd rather use the word hopeful. I believe in hope. I have a hope that there will be more support for people, more opening to, he said it shouldn't be a chapel, it should be a place that anybody can go to, that all are welcome in this place. And anyway, it's just an incredible thing.
Great reading, great call, Linda. Thank you so much
for sharing
it with us.
Yeah, that was a great section. I'm very glad you mentioned that. That was terrific. You wonder what's going to happen if there's any room here for divorced and remarried Catholics, because of course they can't.
Well, of course,
get
I mean,
communion.
He says, you know, for all those who are wounded, that's a lot of Catholics.
Yeah.
I mean, most Catholics have some wound, I would imagine. And he mentions about divorcees, women who've had abortions, so gays, everyone.
But aren't married priests, and it's sort of through the back door of being allowed into the Catholic Church
Episcopal Church.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it certainly opens up, there's a very large number of divorced Catholics who aren't objectively in correct status with the Church, and he's saying these have to be part.
Let's take a couple more quick ones if we can. Danielle, you're in Boston, and you're on Boston Public Radio. Hi, Danielle.
Hi. I'm just calling in just to one quick comment. So I'm a lifelong Catholic. My parents are Catholic. My husband is Catholic. My husband's family is Catholic. And my son goes to Catholic school. I've gone to Catholic school all my life. And I go to Mass every weekend, and I donate money to the church, etc. And I am just thrilled.
Good.
I am thrilled. just can't tell you. This has been an uplifting thing for me to listen to. And, you know, I'm just, I mean, Dave, we just have to focus more on social issues. You know,
yeah.
I am my brother's keeper, and that is the central tenet of Christianity and Catholicism. And I think in America, we're just getting too, I completely agree with the Pope. We're just too entrenched in these personal sexuality issues when people are really suffering.
How much would you like to be on the conference call with a council of bishops this afternoon or whatever? I'll tell you, I'd like to hear that, baby. Danielle, thanks for a great call.
But don't you think that there's a great variation, too, that the bishops who might have been more liberal have said, I got to shut up because I can't go off the reservation?
Right. I mean, I think there is a lot of that bishops tend to try to speak with one collective voice.
Right.
And when they perceive the tone of Rome or of their own leadership here in the U.S. to be more morally conservative, they certainly toe that line. But certainly there are many individual bishops in the U.S. and elsewhere who are very strongly committed to issues of social justice. But this is giving them more permission, I feel, to speak out more and to collectively do something, to be more engaged.
Who's the guy from New York, the bishop from New York, the Cardinal?
Cardinal Dolan.
Yeah, he's a real operator politician type. I can see him doing about face because he sees where the ship of state is heading.
Well, and in fairness, I mean, many bishops have been involved over the years in speaking out, but not with the same systematic way on issues of poverty, for example, or immigration reform.
Let's take one more if we can. Mark, you're in Nantucket, and you're on Boston Public Radio. Thank you very much for the call.
Hi, Jim. Actually, Pawtucket in Rhode Island.
Oh, I'm sorry. Pawtucket. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm calling. I'm a lapsed gay Catholic and very, very encouraged by what the Pope has said in this interview. For myself, my issues with the church began when Benedict referred to gays as being intrinsically disordered.
Yeah.
And I was very insulted by those words and felt that we were marginalized by the church. And so it's exciting for me to hear what the Pope is saying. So I'm very, very encouraged and may even, you know, consider returning to Mass, which I haven't been in quite a while, but that's just, you know, part of how I felt. My other thing that I wanted to say was when he spoke about a greater role for women in the church, my hope is that he will name a nun to head the Roman Curia.
Michelle Dillon, what's your response to that?
Well, it doesn't have to be a nun. There's many other, yes, but I mean, certainly.
Oh, that's true. Females that certainly could step into that role.
Certainly.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yes, you don't have to be ordained to have a leadership role, but the history is that, of course, only the ordained have these powerful leadership roles. Yes, but you're right.
Mark, thanks for a great call, too.
That's my hope.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Mark,
thank you very much.
By the way, he hasn't yet called off the Inquisition against the American young nuns, has he?
Well, it's not called off, but it's not, I don't think, proceeding any further in the last couple of months.
Because the last people who should be investigated, these poor nuns living on, you know, seeds and stems there, trying to do the work of the Lord, as it were, in these little tiny, dumpy little homes.
Right.
So before you leave,
they're all teeny and tiny and dumpy. They're not all teeny and tiny and dumpy.
Michelle Dillon, how soon till we hear the Pope talk expansively about the sexual abuse crisis in the church?
Well, I don't know that he's going to. You know, maybe as part of this shift away from being obsessed with sex, he'll not say very much about it.
Is it mentioned at all in the 12,000 words?
No, I mean, he talked about many who are socially wounded, but not specifically sex abuse. Although he did say priests and nuns who don't fulfill their pastoral and sacramental obligations, then they're not being fruitful in their priestly roles. So that could be seen as an allusion to that. You know, I think certainly at the local level, as he says himself, he much prefers to talk to people one-on-one and small groups, even though he seems to be doing very well, as we saw in Brazil with the masses, with large crowds. He may not make anything more extensive about it. I think he might say deeds are more important than words, and what he does and what his advisors that he has appointed this group of eight cardinals in terms of new practices in the Curia and in terms of practices of regulation of priests and all of that, that will be maybe what we have to wait and see.
You know, Michelle Dillon, you're great on the phone. You're even better in person. So we hope to see you again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Sure,
it was
my
great
pleasure,
fun
always
to talk to you. Michelle Dillon is a professor of sociology and the department chair at the University of New Hampshire. When we come back, Callie Crossley joins us with a trifecta of important stories that went under the radar this week. That conversation up next on 89.7 Boston Public Radio. ¶¶
researchers at UMass Medical School in Worcester announced they'd found a way to shut down the extra chromosome that causes the developmental problems of people with Down syndrome.
Higher education impacts everything from our economy to our ability to remain a world leader.
We were fortunate to get funding for high-risk, high-impact work.
Listen for reports from WGBH's Higher Education Desk on campus with reporter Kirk Carapeza on 89.7 WGBH.
We love our contributors. That means you and Bill Haney's North Shore Music Theater, presenting the modern family musical La Cage aux Folles, starring the Nanny's Charles Shaughnessy. North Shore Music Theater in Beverly, September 24th through October 6th, nsmt.org. And the Massachusetts Teachers Association, reminding you that learning doesn't just happen in the classroom. It happens all day, every day. Working together, parents and teachers can make this a successful school year for every child in Massachusetts.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Joining us in Studio 3 is the host of Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. I always feel like I'm giving it away when I say the title of the show first. So obviously, she is Callie Crossley, who seems to be in a vehicular frame of mind. Callie, it's great to see you.
Good to see you too, Jim.
That's
hey, Marjorie.
Right. Good afternoon, Ms. Callie. Okay, so vehicular frame of mind, Callie. What's going on at the RMV that's got a bee in your bonnet?
Well, no, I'm happy because I remember when the RMV said, we're not going to remind you to, you know, pony up. It's time for you to renew your license. And I'm one of those scattered people. I try to put it on various calendars, but I would be the one being stopped by the cop, you know, hello.
That's two of us. I'm serious.
You know,
I'm totally
I just
with you.
Can't keep that up. So anyway, I was delighted to hear that they're going to bring back the birthday cards, and they send you a card and say, it's your birthday. Time to renew your license, and it's all free, and it's free because some company that they've not identified, to my knowledge, is going to get advertising on the card. Now, the card just says it's your birthday, remember to renew your license. It doesn't have all your personal information and all that. It goes out, it costs $1 million or something, and these people are happy to pick it up because they can advertise on the card.
Pick up everything, not only the price of the card and the mailing,
printing.
But the printing and the postage. Sure,
right,
the whole
deal,
not a penny for the...
Exactly.
How do you feel? By the way, I'm exactly where you are. I'd always forget. And the birthday, the card was the trigger. I think it would have stopped in 2008. A lot of screaming about this. The only thing I'm a little queasy about, and I used to be really queasy, and my queasiness quotient is reduced over the years, is paid advertising on government stuff. It's Viagra decided to, or whatever it is,
and we don't know what this is, by the way.
Usurious bank decided, I'm going to pay for this thing. Do we really want that? So that's the only thing that tempers my happiness, too.
No, I'm with you. And again, I said, we don't know who the advertising company is. We'll find out, or somebody will, as soon as their birthday comes up, and then we'll know. But I don't know why they didn't just say who it was, either.
You think it's one of those sadistic tow truck operations?
I wouldn't want to spend $1 million to have people reminded it's their birthday.
If you an advertising company?
No, if it was the RMV that had to spend it, I wouldn't want to spend that money. I mean, pay attention, you guys. Pay attention.
I'm
scatterbrain, and I can remember to renew my license. You know why? Because you get the same picture for 10 years. I keep thinking, oh, my God, next time I go in, I'm going to have to get a picture that's 10 years older than
excuse
me.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. This is a woman. I wouldn't have brought this up. Marjorie gets into the newsroom today. First thing she says after she sits in her chair, after walking about a mile from the garage, which is pretty much what it is, uh-oh, I left my phone in the car. Uh-oh, I left my glasses in the car. She had to walk. So the notion that you could say as blithely as you do, I don't want the government to notify us. You would never renew your license if it weren't
true.
For a notification.
Because I may be scatterbrained about some things, but other things like aging issues, I am laser-like in my focus on those, let me tell you.
Well, now, here's the thought, and I don't know why this wasn't a possibility. You'd have to opt in, which I think, you know, helps us on the privacy issue, is if they said, if you give us your email address, we'll send you a note. Now, does that you have to pay somebody, I guess, to push the button and send it out. But it wouldn't seem to be it would be $1 million. And then you still have people who wouldn't remember. But that's on you then at that point. I could go with that.
Well,
that wasn't an option.
What if I meet you and up you one?
Okay.
How about for those of us who are troubled by, and they should tell us, and maybe it's just this one article didn't say who the advertiser was, but now I'm getting more anxious about it too. How about this as a third option? If you want to be notified and you don't want an ad, it's sort of like when you buy a Kindle, with or without ads, it's cheaper, cheaper with them. If you want to be notified but you don't want an ad on your postcard, it's going to cost you $2 every X number of years. I'd pay the $2, add $2 to my license.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And you, and let the taxpayer, let me, the taxpayer and driver, pay for it. What are you laughing? It's a great idea.
I can just imagine there'd be a big brouhaha about this. You know, people would be up in arms. So we have to pay them $2 to remind us it's our birthday. People would be hysterical.
Well, then, you can opt out like you would.
Yes, you could opt out then. That's a choice. Otherwise, I think you're going to hire Leland Chung, my city councilor, who somehow always knows my birthday, which creeps me out.
I got a birthday from him, thing from him, too.
Yes. He sends you a card.
Yes, I get a little card. I'm like, how does Leland Chung know my
Come on. What they do is when you go to the – I can't believe you two don't know this. When
you, I don't know this.
Former city councilor, when you go
– list?
No. The mail, if you go to the voters list, it has a couple things. It has your name. It has the party in which you're registered unless you're unenrolled, and then I think it's blank. And I'm 99% sure it has your birth date. So they just enter all that stuff on a computer, and then they spit out your birthday wishes. And people like me and Kelly say, how nice of Leland Chung was it to send us a birthday card.
Kind of bothers me, but I do note that he's the only city councilor that ever remembers my birthday. Nobody ever else ever.
Okay.
The only problem is that when he sends a card, he says, "You know, you don't look 72." It's really.
And here's a crucial question: will you vote for this guy because he sends you the card or not?
But here is a better question. I mean, here's a better thought. I think is that you never forget his name.
That's exactly right.
I'm like, how does he know? Okay, well, all right, Leland Chung. I know his name.
So staying on the vehicular front, as we said a minute ago, what another thing that caught your eye were a number of analyses that suggest the day of the sub $3 a gallon gas is what they say went the way of the Edsel, essentially. We're never going to see it again.
Right. I'm one of those people that I kind of keep a half ear on when they say the gas price is up or down or whatever, because I'm usually, daggone it, I'm have an empty gas tank. Why didn't I go last week? So when I heard this news, this is from AAA saying, now gas prices have been over $3 for more than 1,000 days. And by the way, that's it. We don't think it's coming back down. I said, whoa. What? So it's gas prices have gone up, and this is U.S. gas prices, and they're in triple digits. They're enjoying a big return. Sarah, why? There's no incentive for them. And then there's, you know, all of the exporting and whatever. The last time it was up over $3 for any length of time was back in Katrina days. And that's because those oil tanks and stuff were hit. So that kind of concerns me. I'd like to think it's coming down again.
You know, I mentioned this yesterday. There was a massive story, which I didn't get all the way through because it was a massive story, in the Sunday New York Times about Wall Street. One of the new fun little things to manipulate now is ethanol prices and how there's a lot of money being made through this manipulating of these prices. Of course, every gallon of gas now is 10% ethanol. So you wonder how much of this we can blame on the masters of the universe that we've all been complaining about all this week long and the fifth anniversary of the Lehman Brothers failure, if it's got to do with that.
I would not be surprised, but it's really kind of scary because if they're already making triple-digit return, this is a U.S. oil people. Come on. Do we have to have over $3 a gallon of gas? And in some places, people, it's higher than that. You know, you think Hawaii, you think California.
Connecticut is always high. I don't know why Connecticut is always high. They must have higher taxes.
But do you remember, I think it's also access to ports, all that sort of, I don't know. But do you remember that leading up to the most recent presidential election, the historians had told us that no president had ever been reelected when gas prices had gone up more than X. And I forget what X was, and they had gone up more than X. And Barack Obama obviously defeated the historical trend. But the sense I get, and maybe I'm wrong, I was thinking, how much does it cost me to fill up my tank these days? And I go to a pretty cheap gas station. It's $60 or more, which is a colossal amount of money. But I think, based on those surveys, just anecdotally, people have accepted the notion, maybe subliminally, this is going to continue to be a usurious kind of thing. And I think it's one of the reasons, I don't know this for a fact, I always believe in conspiracy theories, why the gas companies feel they have the ability to keep, the oil companies feel they have the ability to keep prices high because America's not happy, but more accepting.
I think that's part of it, but there's also a tipping point because you'll remember when it really got close to four and was hanging there for a long time, people started, that's when the tea population here in time. It just went through the roof.
Yeah.
Because people said, whoa, whoa, I can't do that. And you also become, now this is a new, not a new norm for me, but something I had done kind of casually, but now I'm fixated on it. When I leave the house, if it's under my purview, you know, running tasks or whatever, I think, what is the most efficient way to go? I don't backtrack. So I'm going in one direction and then I'm coming back. And that saves a ton. It seems like a small thing, but if you did it on a consistent basis, it does save a lot of gas. So I think people may be thinking in that way as well, but I like to think it would come down a little bit. I hope it does.
Now, you get the electric cars, I guess, that we're talking about.
Yeah, I saw an ad for one.
Only
yeah.
100
yeah.
grand is not yeah. a problem. Now, Callie, okay, well. I know what your under-the-radar topic is, and so, Marjorie, I'm going to give you a quiz.
Uh-huh.
Name the governor who has said the following in the last several years. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
He refers to a Democratic state senator in his state who's getting involved in deadlock budget negotiations. Senator Jackson claims to be for the people, but he's the first one to give it to the people without providing Vaseline. That's the first thing this governor says. Shortly after assuming office in 2011, this governor said he wouldn't attend the MLK Day events by the NAACP. Quote, I'm not going to be held hostage by a special interest group, and if they don't like it, tell them to kiss my butt. Do you know who that is?
I certainly do. He's well known, notorious. He's the governor of Maine.
He is Paul LePage. What's Governor LePage? By the way, he's running for re-election, as far as I understand,
yes.
in 2014. What is he up to of late, Kelly Crosley?
Well, he has, as one of his big issues, as you've heard a lot about here in Massachusetts, welfare fraud. There's got to be plenty of it. He's going to ferret it out, daggone it. So he spent $700,000. To fund 8 new investigators to ferret out that fraud. And they came up with a whopping, wait for it, 45 cases of alleged welfare fraud.
In the whole state.
In the state.
Fewer than 6 per investigator.
I just wonder, does anyone see the irony in that? I mean, this is crazy.
You know, this reminds me of this whole thing now where everybody says, oh, well, 1 in 7 people in America are on food stamps, and that's why the House had to cut all that money out of the food stamp budget, because they're unemployed.
Exactly.
I mean, the unemployment rate is high, so naturally, when you don't have a salary, you need government help.
But,
and it's the same thing, I'm sure, in Maine with the economy suffering up there as well. There was a great story about Maine Yankee, and I feel about nuclear power plants, but the talk about how ever since they shut that down, people in that town where it was located are in dire straits. The schools don't have enough money. Nobody has enough money.
And I want to also add to those people who are unemployed, there are people who are working
every day. That's a very good point. I keep saying this,
that need this for their family.
Yep.
Now, don't get me wrong. I get really mad at the 45 people who, if they are 45 in Maine, who are taking money from those people who are working every day and need that support, and also those people who are unemployed. But to spend $700,000
for 45 people, I did the math,
by the way. If they're all guilty, all 45 are guilty and they're only charged, mm-hmm. and if they all got the average benefit in Maine, which is $500 a month, mm-hmm. it costs the state of Maine only $3 for every dollar in welfare fraud that they were able to ferret out. So it was a little bit of, maybe it's a lost leader, he can suggest.
I just don't get it. I mean, help me with that. I go where there. I mean, I'm all with him if he turned up a 1,000 cases.
Oh, excuse me. He just called in. He said, Callie, you should kiss his butt, I believe is what he said.
Sure.
I can't believe he got elected. I can't believe this guy gets elected. And if they elect him again in Maine.
Well, by the way, it was a multi-county race. He had 38% of the vote.
Yes.
So it's not.
But still.
So, Callie, Sunday night, 6:30, yes. Under the Radar with Callie Crosley.
Yes.
We'll be listening.
And Callie and I are going to be
on. And if you don't watch, you know what you can do for me.
I do that all the time. Thank you.
Callie and I are on Beat the Press tonight.
Oh, you are?
We're both
great.
On with Emily Rooney. You're going to join us in a few minutes. And 7:30 for Basic Black, which is a fantastic show.
And it's the season opener.
I was going to say, it's just debuted again. Mm-hmm. And tune in again, as Jim said, every Sunday night at 6:30 for Under the Radar. When we come back, we are going to unpack the appeal of Grand Theft Auto V, the video game that raked in $800
million
in sales in one day. Who plays this game? Why do they play this game? Do you play this game? That's next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Even with hindsight being 20/20, betting on a woman founding an entirely new industry in the throes of the Great Depression still seems pretty unlikely. But it's the story of Estee Lauder.
Cosmetic sales, like candy sales and alcohol sales and ice cream sales, go up. in downtimes.
I'm Kara Miller. What went right for Estee Lauder on Innovation Hub, Saturday morning at 10 here on 89.7 WGBH.
Funding for our programs comes from you and Samets Blackstone Associates for more than 30 years helping businesses and nonprofits tell their stories and build relationships through integrated brand strategy, design, and digital media. On the web at sametz.com. And great performances with an acclaimed miniseries that examines four of Shakespeare's most famous history plays. This week, Richard II, starring James Purefoy. Watch The Hollow Crown, Friday at 9 on WGBH 2.
I'm Jim Browder, she's Marge Regan, and you're listening to Boston Public Radio.
So you giving me a lecture about not being a good enough gangbanger? That's all we got? That's our heritage. I thought we was trying to get out of this bullshit.
You sounding more and more like a snee-eye-itch every day.
Tell him it's a celebration, bitch. Yeah. I sound like somebody trying to make some paper and not get killed.
Now, that's from the trailer for Grand Theft Auto V. The video game made more than $800 million on the first day of release earlier this week, selling the same number of games in one day as the prior version did in one year. So who are these gamers? Could teenage boys be the only demographic force behind these millions of dollars spent? And are they too violent? Joining us on the line to go over what the latest edition offers, who bought it, who actually plays, is Jamin Warren. He runs KillScreenDaily.com. It's a website devoted to all things gaming. Jamin, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, how are you doing?
Excellent.
Hey, Jamin, thanks for being here. I'm excited about this, the torture scenes, the meth dealers, gangbangers and stuff. So who is the audience for this, Jamin? Who's buying all these games?
Well, you can tell clearly by the size that it's a lot larger than just teenage boys.
Yeah.
I mean, this is large on the scale of an entertainment event, not just a video game event. And when the last Grand Theft Auto 4 came out, it was the largest entertainment event until Avatar took it over, and I presume that GTA 5 will take back that crown, take back that crown, so to speak. I think that the demographics have changed a lot. I mean, there's obviously a wide range. These titles tend to skew much more heavily on the male side, as is expected. But, you know, I wouldn't expect the demographics to be much different than, you know, a big summer blockbuster, whether it's The Avengers or Elysium or something like that.
I saw a survey, the fourth version came out, saying the average gamer in America is 34 years old. The average gamer who's bought one in recent times is 39 years old. And actually, a story on National Public Radio today said 15%, which surprised me, it was even that high, of those who purchased these 13 million units in the last day or two are women. Is that fairly typical? It's actually low on the women's side, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends. I mean, we shouldn't think about titles like Grand Theft Auto as representing all video games.
Right.
I think that's really important because, you know, it's obviously a very big segment, but if you looked at it more specifically, then the fact that there are 15% of women purchasing that title, I suppose, I don't know how that compares against other, you know, sort of more male demographically, consumed entertainment. So, I think that the big thing is we're seeing like a widening of the net and the growth in terms of how old, gamers are getting. You know, I think the range of one of the fastest growing groups of people who play video games are those in their 40s and 50s. And that makes sense. You have disposable income. You have the ability to go and drop $60 on a title. And, you know, in fact, amongst younger teenage gamers, a lot of them are flocking to cheaper titles. So free-to-play games, whether it's Clash of Clans on mobile devices or something like League of Legends on PC, simply because those are free-to-play.
We're talking with Jamin Warren, who runs the website KillScreenDaily.com. He knows all about gaming. So I assume you've played this game?
I tried to install it last night. It takes 16 gigs. Just so anybody else out there knows, you have to install 16 gigs. But I've watched a bunch of the trailers, and I have a copy of it sitting on my desk.
So what is the huge appeal of this game? Why do people – I mean, I know that that it looks unbelievably real. I mean, the technology has come a long way since we saw Grand Theft Auto, the first versions years ago. But what is it about this game?
Well, I think that the Hauser brothers, the makers of the Grand Theft Auto franchise, are tapping into the same vein as a director like Martin Scorsese or Quentin Tarantino only instead of watching someone else, you know, perform crime sequences on screen, you're able to do those things yourselves. I think one of the things that they've done incredibly well, you know, from a marketing standpoint, really creating a realistic world, but it's all the polish and the details. You know, there's a, you can trade stocks in this game. There's an under, for the first time, there's an undersea world that you can go and explore. They've really created a huge, huge playground that allows people to kind of do whatever they want. And understandably, that can take a long time to develop, but it's also, you know, very appealing for someone who doesn't want to be stuck in the same routine. A lot of other, you know, first-person shooters kind of stick people on a rail. That's what it's called in, you know, game terminology. And this game gives you the opportunity to do a lot of different things kind of at your own pace.
So, well, yeah, that isn't that the key? I mean, you mentioned movies. The biggest movie opening ever, and one that I think was the Harry Potter, which made barely more than half what Grand Theft Auto V did just the other day. But the difference is you have no control over that movie. You have a lot of control over what develops in Grand Theft Auto and comparable things. But, Jamin, step back for a second. For those who don't even know what the storyline is, what is the basic storyline of this one in particular?
You know, storyline of Grand Theft Auto 5, it's, you know, three different characters, a former bank robber, his former partner in crime, and then a repo man. And, you know, much like the similar plots of the games, they're kind of, you know, going after that big score, getting a sense of, you know, sort of taking over the town. I mean, it's not profound, plot-wise, it's not profoundly different from, you know, a movie like Casino, for example.
$270 million for those who are thinking about the math to make this. $800 million taken in one day.
So I just want to be clear. You don't have to go out and as one of these characters and electrocute people and torture them and pull their teeth. You have the options not to do that, because that's where a lot of the criticism is coming in, not to mention the demeaning of women's thing. But you don't have to, right?
Well, I think, first of all, it's really important. I mean, the game has the name of a felony in the title. So right. Insofar as you've made the decision to purchase this game in the first place, you know what you're getting into. I mean, it would be different, I think, if it came with the Xbox 360, it shipped with every title, it was showing up the way that, you know, AOL Internet CDs did in the 90s on your doorstep. So if you've decided that that's some experience that you want, then you're probably not going to be surprised that, you know, that there are acts of violence. There are obviously acts of violence against women. You know, it's a torture sequence. I don't think that should be surprising anyone. But, you know, again, I think it's really important. This is a game that's designed for adults, and there's no reason that kids should be playing this game. Absolutely none whatsoever. And I think that, you know, obviously parents need to make wise decisions about what sorts of things they let in their home. So, you know, I think that a lot of times the criticism is stemmed, you know, look at, you know, that children have access to these types of games, and, you know, I really think the burden falls on parents, obviously, at some level, you know, on us as community members to, you know, say, hey, look, this is something that's for adults. It's not for kids.
Yeah, and it is clear, it is not Mary Poppins 5. For those who are, hey, Jamin, I'm sure you deal with this all the time. This is Jamin Warren, by the way, talking to us from killscreendaily.com. When Aaron Alexis was identified as the shooter at the Navy Yard the other day, they mentioned that he was playing World of Warcraft, like 16 hours a day, Call of Duty. I just looked up, there was an 8-year-old kid who killed his 87-year-old caretaker in Louisiana a couple of months ago, and the contention was made, obviously not proven, that it was his obsession with Grand Theft Auto that caused him to be violent. Where do you come down on the causal effect between watching this stuff nonstop and some of the viewers, some of the players ending up doing horrible things?
Right. Well, I mean, I think in all those circumstances, obviously, there are extenuating circumstances. In the case of that young boy, first of all, I don't know why an 8-year-old child is not there. Has no parents.
Yeah.
He's there with his, you know, caretaker in his 90s playing Grand Theft Auto and has access to a gun. So obviously those create circumstances where problems will happen. And the same with Aaron Alexis, who had a long history of, you know, of mental illness, was discharged from the Navy. So, I mean, I think the one thing is that, you know, video games are often blamed as a cause as opposed to an effect. So obviously, if you have the type of personality, if you're struggling with mental illness, or you don't understand the consequences of your actions, then yes, I could see how playing a game like Grand Theft Auto may not be the best thing for your psyche. You know, there are no studies that prove that games, I mean, like any form of media, there's, you know, it's very difficult to prove that, you know, a game like Grand Theft Auto turned someone into a psychopath.
Who wasn't on the path anyway. No, I think that's a very good point.
Yeah, exactly. go ahead.
I was just going to say, there was a great quote from a 43-year-old woman who talks about how she loves to play the Grand Theft Auto games, and she loves to play a lot of games, and she feels a little embarrassed about it sometimes because people do criticize the depiction of women, and there isn't a female main character in this. Correct me if I'm wrong, they're all male characters.
Yeah, they are.
But she does have a great quote about why she likes to play. She said, "It's like dress up. You had a hard day at work, you go home, you run over some people, steal their money, you feel better."
Hey, Jamie.
Do you get that perspective?
Yeah, you know, it's funny for a game, because there's so much that you can do in this world, it does have some of the same appealing values that became like The Sims, for example. I mean, I know when Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, I had a friend's mother, I'm sorry, with Grand Theft Auto Vice City, which took place in Miami, I had a friend's mother who would just get on a scooter and drive around. That's all she really wanted to do. So if that's your thing, if you want to get a haircut, if you can do yoga in the new game, I mean, there's lots of things that you can do.
Yeah, you can do yoga in this game. I love it.
Hey, Jamie and Warren, last two things for me. Obviously, as I said, $250 million to $250 million to make this thing. Are the voice actors, and they're quite good from the trailer at least, are they people we'd know, or are they sort of just gaming voice actors as opposed to people we see who doing voices in Hollywood movies, for example?
You know, it's really interesting. You know, with the early Grand Theft Auto game, with Grand Theft Auto 3, they had cast Ray Liotta as the voice of that game. And early on, the early Grand Theft Auto, when it entered the 3D world, I guess about 10 years ago, Rockstar had started to try and pull in some of these bigger characters. And then they sort of discovered that that didn't really make a big difference in terms of bringing in star voice talent. And it's expensive. And sometimes timelines don't work out. So, you know, understandably, they're spending, you know, upwards of, you know, $200 million on this game. They could look to getting this talent, but clearly that's not what the draw is. You know, what's on center stage here is not a Hollywood voice actor.
Got it.
It's the game itself. That's what people are going to buy.
Last thing for me is, when I tried to watch the trailer today, virtually any site I went to, as soon as you clicked on it, you had to type in your date of birth. What is the, I mean, which obviously is purely a cover because you can type in anything. What is, when it says mature audiences, which was the warning, theoretically, what does that mean? Is there an age below which you are theoretically not playing? Is there an age below which you have to have a parental guidance? What does that mean?
Yeah, it's similar to, it's similar to the parental guidance warnings that you see on music. There's an organization called the ESRB. They hand out ratings to a wide variety of different titles. M being, you know, it's like rated R, and then there's, you know, AO, which is, you know, sort of like rated X. And so, you know, this game is designed that you should think of, you know, a rated M game the same way as a rated R movie. There's going to be stuff in there that's, you know, not appropriate for children. For the website, that's just standard. I mean, that's standard age gating. You'll see the same thing on, you know, alcohol and tobacco website.
Yeah, right. You do.
I suspect they also do it for demographic reasons, so they can see who their consumers are.
Jim, how old are you?
I am 31 years old.
31 years old. Okay, just one last question from me. I mean, you're obviously in this. You have the killscreendaily.com, and you're into this kind of in a semi-professional way. But among your friends, when do you think people are too involved? I mean, you know, an hour a day, 2 hours a day? When is it, do you look at your friends or look at yourself and say, I'm a little bit too into this gaming all day long?
Well, I don't have any friends who spend all day playing games. I mean, one of the things that you discover as you get older is that you have to pay rent. And and unfortunately, Grand Theft Auto does not. Yeah, you don't get paid real money in like that stuff. I mean, you know, I think that it's a balance. Everyone establishes their own sort of hierarchy of cultural, you know. And for some people, video games are at the top, and for some people, television is at the top. And, you know, what's interesting about a game like Grand Theft Auto, about the Grand Theft Auto series, I have a lot of friends who play games, but, you know, a couple times a year they'll buy something big, they'll binge on it, and then they'll put it down.
Huh.
I think that that's a reflection of the way that, you know, older game players are approaching these titles.
Okay.
They'll spend $60 once a quarter, and the same way that over Labor Day people banged out House of Cards or, you know, Breaking Bad or whatever it might be, they're doing the same thing with a game like Grand Theft Auto.
And by the way, Breaking Bad, the most celebrated television show right now, I would argue what Walter White has done on screen is no less horrible than what everybody's screaming about that's done in Grand Theft Auto 5. So people should put that in context. Jamin, thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Take care.
Thank you again for being with us. Jamin Warren, as I said before, runs the website Killscreen. You can find him at killscreendaily.com. It is a site all about everything to do with gaming. Okay, so is this just a fun pastime? You go home, you run over some people, you steal their money, and you feel better? Or is this the greatest assault upon children in this country since polio, as one of its critics states? Tell us what you think. 877-301-8970. 877-301-8970. What do you think, Jim? Do you want to get people with sledgehammers and electric cables and torture people at the end of the day?
I've only seen it's $60. It's 59 something.
Right.
I don't want to own it, but I do want to try it. Because, I mean, 13 million units sold worldwide in day one, $800 million. The most interesting thing, Jamie was great, the most interesting thing he said was the fastest growing demographic for video games, 40 and 50-year-olds. 877-301-8970. The average age, as I said to him, I read this morning, 34 years old, and it's getting older. All video games, 40% are played by women. Apparently only 15% of those who bought either pre-ordered or on the first day, this $800 million, only 15% women. It's supposedly ridiculously misogynistic, but again, I haven't...
Oh, it's okay. You know, you get the sledgehammer, smash a few prostitutes. It makes you feel...
Well, you're watching... as I said to them at the end, you're not watching Breaking Bad. In the last episode, without giving away any details, because I know some people are going to binge view before the end, Walter White was not exactly kind to a woman or two in this particular episode. Let's take a few calls. 877-301-8970. Amanda, you're in Millboro, and you're on with Jim and Marjorie on Boston Public Radio. Hey, Amanda.
Hi there. How are you?
Excellent.
What do you think?
So my husband is also 31, like Jamie from Killscreen, and I think that they just grew up with it. I saw the opening for it, and I was horrified. I looked away, and I said, did they just shoot a security guard? And he says, yeah, well, he was asking for it. She took my buddy hostage. And I'm like, this is not the man I thought I knew.
Your husband pre-ordered the thing and just got it?
He pre-ordered it. He popped it in the second he could after he got home from work. And I'm doing my homework and saying, this is worse than before. He says, well, they have to up the ante. I said, why are you playing this? He says, well, it's like going out to watch a big blockbuster movie. They put $250 million in it. So you got to get it because the quality is so high. It's just such a good game to play, regardless of the subject matter. I disagree. I think it's awful. But I was never desensitized like he was, I guess.
How many hours did he play on the first night, Amanda?
About 4 hours.
Oh, only four.
He did afterwards, so that was what counted.
That was a great first call on this. Thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Milford, where Anderson is on the phone. We're talking about $800 million in sales on day one of Grand Theft Auto V. Hi, Anderson.
Hi, Anderson.
They deserve every penny of what they made. I mean, the game is amazing. On the violence subject, my wife actually won't let me play the game, the story missions for it, if she's not around to watch, because she's so into the plot of what's going on. And I really equate it to any kind of mob movie or anything like that, except for that it's much, much longer, and you have a certain degree of player agency where, you're actually in control of the event.
Well, stay with that. I'm really glad you brought up the mob movie thing. Pick a great mob movie you've seen and compare the level of violence, both against women and in general in the movie, with Grand Theft Auto V. Give us a movie.
Okay. So let's take Heat, for example, with De Niro.
Yep.
Great heist movie. A lot of people in it that are just kind of reprehensible characters, not a lot of redeeming qualities. On that score, they're kind of equivalent. There's a lot of moral ambiguity to these characters, and they're complex, and it's very interesting to see what's going to happen with them. In terms of the level of violence, it's hard to compare the two because you can get away with more in a video game than you can in a movie. But at the same time, if you compare it to like a Game of Thrones or something on HBO, I'd say it's no more violent than Game of Thrones, except for that the violence is a lot more frequent.
Now, Anderson, are you really upset you had to stop for a few minutes to call us on the phone or no?
No, not at all.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Sadly, I'm on the clock, so I'll be playing tonight when I get home.
Okay. Anderson, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
But I guess that is the difference.
What is?
It's the time spent playing this game. There was some study from some group worrying about video games saying the 2010, this is 3 years ago, obviously, in 2010, the average gamer spent 8 hours a week playing video games. And I guess that's not so bad when you say an hour and a half a day, but you're not watching Game of Thrones an hour and a half
no,
a day.
But there were moments when I would watch three or four Sopranos in a row, over ones episodes I'd seen yet again And again, so I can think of times where I spent 3 or 4 hours in a row, many a time, watching a relatively violent, not a wildly violent, yeah, relatively violent HBO series.
You're not deranged, though.
Well.
Mostly.
Okay, let's take one more quick one in here if we can. Ryan, you're in Canton. You're on Boston Public Radio. Hey, Ryan.
How's it going, guys?
Hey.
Well, first of all, I wasn't allowed to play this game when I was a kid. My father called it Death Wish 3. But after playing this in college, I would turn the TV off, and I'm kind of embarrassed to admit that I just felt violent, and I would envision myself shooting people that I saw. Not actually. I mean, I can totally differentiate between real life and a video game.
You're not being facetious. You're serious, aren't you?
No, yes, 100%. It's different from a movie because you're in control of it, and when you're in control of this actual simulation, then it's just going to make you more violent.
So you're one of those people, we brought this up with Jamin a few minutes ago, that if you have a predilection for violence, if you're on the edge, like an Alexis, for an Aaron Alexis, you, I assume, could see someone being pushed the last mile over the edge to do horrible things.
Totally. Absolutely.
That's
so
comforting.
Okay, so what do you think, Ryan? Should we be regulating these more strictly? Should we be patrolling the content, or should we just say, you know, whatever will be, will be?
Well, it's really up to the parents, and the parents who are going to have the out of control kids are really not going to do anything about it, and that's kind of the unfortunate.
I agree. We're not going. You can't, Marjorie. Ryan, thanks for the call. We're not going to. What's the word I'm looking for?
Legislate.
We're not going to legislate one. And if they attempt to legislate, it's not going to make any difference, since on the internet you're going to find it somewhere. This is one of these areas where when you're talking about kids, the parents have to play a huge role. I mean, they just do.
And parents often have no idea what their kids are doing or watching or playing.
Well, I would say if your kid has disappeared for 4 hours straight staring at a screen and you don't know that the kid's playing.
He's over at Johnny's house playing basketball for all you know. And they're 15 years old. You're not watching them nonstop. I'm going over to Susie's. We're gonna, you know, we're gonna get our hair done.
The bar too. Yeah. So
exactly. And it probably wouldn't be Susie. It would be Sam's house that we'd be going to play these games. Anyway, when we come back, it's time for Open Mic with Emily Rooney. That and her list of grievances and observations are coming up at 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
What do you love about WGBH?
Morning Edition and all things considered.
Jim and Marjorie.
Prairie Home Companion.
Get more of what you love by signing on as a WGBH sustainer. Sustainers enjoy the ease of monthly installments and the convenience of automatic renewal. And if 7,000 sustainers sign on before the end of the year, then every WGBH station and program will go fundraiser-free this February. Learn more at wgbh.org/sustainer.
WGBH programs exist because of you and Merrimack Repertory Theater, kicking off its 35th season with God of Carnage by Yasmina Reza. Two sets of parents meet and try to settle their son's dispute like adults. Now through October 13th. Tickets at mrt.org. And Four Centuries of Massachusetts Furniture, where you can see extraordinary furniture made in Massachusetts from the 1600s to the present at museums and cultural institutions throughout the state. Details at fourcenturies.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Brady and Marjorie Egan. We're all usually joined on Fridays at about 1 o'clock on Open Mic by Emily Rooney. She was delayed playing Grand Theft Auto 5, but she is finally here. Hello, Emily Rooney.
You know, Jim, I admitted that one of the reasons why I don't try that is because I think I would be addicted.
By the way, I wish I had said the same thing because I feel exactly...
I know I would be, so
see,
I'm not...
You see the
it's
trailer?
Not beneath me.
The trailer, the trailer is really
habits.
Seductive. And
I have enough bad habits.
That's a very good point. Want to split
you guys are
the
very
60
hostile.
Bucks with me?
Very, very hostile. Okay, we're going to start talking about this local homeless guy, Glenn James. He found this backpack containing $42,000, and he turned it into police. And like I said, he's homeless. Here's Ethan Whittenden. He is a guy from Alabama who's never been to Boston, and he started a fundraising website for this homeless gentleman, Glenn James.
The fact that there is somebody out there that shows that humanity, you know, it kind of gives you hope. I want to put the message out there that the sky's the limit as far as, you know, people helping other people.
I don't know.
What's your problem?
I think there's a cautionary tale here. We've seen this before. Remember that guy Ted Williams, who is the roadside singer, who had the great voice?
Yes.
And then suddenly before you know it, he's on the talk show circuit, as has this guy been. He's been profiled by all the evening news. Before you knew it, the guy was back in rehab because he went back to drinking. You know, the media got so involved in his life, they tricked him into, you know, reuniting with his mother. And it's just like one thing after another. I don't know. And the other thing is, we frankly don't know the first thing about this guy. We lionize these people before. Why is he homeless? What's the deal? He's been in, you know, a shelter for 8 years. I don't know. And the language that's being used on him.
You know,
what a great guy. And he's such a sweet, sweet man. I don't know.
And they don't know. They don't know either.
The slightest idea.
Well, so what's your objection? Your objection is the way we've covered it. Your objection is the guy raising $100,000 for him?
Yeah, I mean, you know.
It's over 100, by the way, for those who don't know.
It's 130. We just took a look at the website. It's like, you know. Why can't this guy do it for himself? Why can't he pull himself up? Why is he living in a homeless shelter? And by the way, aren't there a lot of other worthy, deserving people who are trying to make it on their own and are struggling? And here we are pouring money into this guy's coffers. I don't know.
You know, also, by the way, he has said, at least in one of the stories I read, he said he does have relatives and family who he could be living
with. God's going to take care of him. If he believes that, let him be.
You know, but
I think he's got a speech problem. He got fired from his job. He's got a
speech. No, he says he's got a speech
yes,
problem.
Yes, he's got a speech problem.
He can't talk.
He can't talk. And, you know, who knows? I mean,
we don't know. That's
my
point.
What's going to be interesting to see is what
here
he
we are,
does
here we are giving
with
him
this
all
money.
This, exactly. And who's going to help him manage it? And, you know,
I bet he gives a lot of
money.
Well,
you know, that's a critical. I mean, well, you don't know that. And you don't know if
I
he has the ability to handle it, if it's going to make it better or worse.
He obviously doesn't have a checkbook now. How would he pay his bills? And somebody would really have to be with him to make this happen.
You know, the only thing that I have to say, which we have not talked about here, that is, and I'm pretty much where you are. I'm troubled by this, too. I can't verbalize it as well as you did. You know what? No, I mean it. You know what I'm more troubled by? That the guy whose backpack he found with $42,000 in it has not given the guy a penny, apparently.
Do we know that for sure?
Well, as far as everything I've read suggests
that. Yeah, he's some Chinese exchange student.
And by the way, my understanding is this character in the South, whoever it was who raised the $130,000 we just heard from a minute ago so far and counting, probably wouldn't have done it if it turns out the other guy had dropped $1,000 on Glenn
or
James or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It would have been the end. Can you imagine someone finding $42,000 of your money, cash and traveler's checks, and not giving him anything?
No, it's bizarre. Yeah. But maybe he just hasn't done it yet or something. Maybe it's a cultural thing.
I think that's
thing.
A charitable. Kind of cultural thing?
I don't know.
No, yeah. I worry. Can I tell
Chinese
you
are notoriously ungenerous in that respect. They don't tip for baggage handlers, anything like that.
So yeah, maybe it's a cultural thing.
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line on this one, by the way, so that you don't sound uncharitable, which you do.
I'm realistic.
It's got to be managed in a more decent way.
Yeah.
When you read about a lot of those guys who spend 30 years in jail, they get out of jail, they get $1 million from the state, and all of a sudden, from one world to another, they have no idea what the hell to do with it.
Yeah, well, I guess
look at that guy, Ted. We all remember who I mean. I know he's got the same name as
him. He's the voice of the 9 o'clock news on NECN. It's not embarrassing. It's not embarrassing.
It is.
Okay. Let's move on that note. I don't think we agreed on that. Now, on your way to work, you did some crack reporting
this morning.
I'm glad you did because I'm obsessed with this story. What did you see?
Okay, so I'm on Newbury Street, which is a block and a half from Boylston, if you count the crossover street, which is Exeter, which is a long block. So I stop. I'm way up the end of Newbury and say, what is this line? And I couldn't understand.
What time is this, by the way?
20 of 8.
Okay.
I said, what is it? And I don't think the store was open yet. I said, what is this line? And the guy gives me this unintelligible answer. I said, what? And then finally some other guy in the line says, Apple iPhone. I said, wow. I mean, these guys are in line. The store opens usually at 10. I don't know what time they're opening today. Maybe they did open at 8 today. But for the 5S or the 5C phone, it's like, really? You got to have it that bad?
How many people do you think were in line?
I'm going to guess 2,000.
Yeah, 2,000?
Wow.
Well, it went from the door at Boylston Street all the way down that block, around the corner on Exeter Street, and all the way up Newbury Street.
I thought that the new iPhones got trashed, too. People were saying they weren't that
great.
Well,
the stock dropped, whatever it did on the day of the issuance.
So even with a phone,
I don't know.
It's
Vicky
not that
Block
exciting?
Was blogging about it, said it was not so great. That's all I know. She's my source on that.
No,
one.
All the, all
no,
the
lots
people,
of people have said it was a big disappointment. It wasn't that much better than the phone you already have. And why would you go out and get another one of them?
Why would
the
you wait in line?
The cheap one is crappy and not so cheap.
Exactly.
Why would you wait in line?
Well, first of all, you know what we need to discuss at some point? We don't have time today. but bring up on your list the whole notion of waiting in line and what somebody.
Don't
in fact, we should do
it.
This next week.
Because you're a line cutter.
What somebody is. No, I'm not. By the way, I am not. When you're 6'5" tall, you do not cut lines because
you're too conspicuous.
Exactly.
No, you pay people to stand in line for
exactly.
you.
That's fine. That's.
At the grocery
people
store.
Work on
As a matter of fact, this poor guy, Glenn James, we're picking on. Didn't you pay him a couple of months ago to stand in line for
you? You know, if I had known him, I probably would. Are you as nuts about lines in general? What were you standing in line for? Just as a preview for a discussion to come. What would you stand in line for?
A good cup of coffee.
Well, I might. You know, the only thing I've ever stood in line for in my life, I've told you this before, Marjorie. I used to live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. On Saturday nights, about 10 o'clock, I would stand in line on 70-something in Broadway for about 45 minutes till the Sunday New York Times came out, and then go to Zabar's to get lox and bagel and eat it at midnight. Yeah. That I stood in line for, and that was about it.
Well, I stood in line for 3 hours to get to the top of the Empire State Building.
Oh, that's
what?
Right.
Children.
And then
it was because of your kids, though.
Yeah. Oh, it was awful.
Oh,
awful, awful, awful. Never go to the Empire State Building.
My daughter
Building
had the funniest line
vacation
ever.
Week.
She was 10 years old. We're at the top of the – I'll never forget this. She looks down. She says, Mom, kind of makes you want to get it over with.
Wait, this is from the top of the
Empire.
Your 10-year-old?
My 10-year-old daughter says that.
Oh, my God.
She's
still
a funny
with
kid.
Us.
No,
she's still with
she's
us.
A,
yes,
she's wry. Let's put it that. So even then, she got it. You know, it's like, yeah, and I know exactly what you mean.
Well, don't you have that? Don't you always get that momentary thing when you get to the top of the Empire State Building? Think about jumping.
That's what she was saying. She's 10 years
then
old.
Then you get yourself together. And
right.
Needless to say, don't do it. It's very difficult for me to drive over the Tobin Bridge because I'm really tempted every time.
Oh my God!
Hey, on a newsier thing, the Apple thing is newsy. It is. We're only 4 days away now from 12 becoming 2. It's the last time we're going to. Actually, we're going to talk to you on Monday, I think.
Yeah.
But what's your sense 4 days out? What's
I think there's a lot of last-minute jockeying going on. You know, we're out of touch in a sense, but we don't really know how much inroads those guys are making day-to-day in certain neighborhoods. I mean, we see the forums and the news coverage, but we don't really know. So we see the advertising on TV, and we see the polling. But the polling is a little bit always after the fact. I think these last 4 days are going to be critical because, as I was telling you anecdotally, It's embarrassing to me that a lot of my friends who live in the city have absolutely no idea who they're voting for.
Hello, Marjorie.
Me.
What do I say that to you all
it's
the time?
Crazy.
People were asking me last night at the WGBH event whom
to
vote for.
You have to start paying attention at this point.
Well, I assume even though every poll, the leader, John Connolly, has been within the margin of error, since he's led 4 out of 4 most recent polls, I think it's fairly likely, unless something catastrophic happens to him or his campaign, he's going to be one of the two.
Yeah.
But Guller Ritchie, who is brutalized by Larry Harmon in an editor column in the Globe.
That wasn't fair, I didn't think.
Let me just say, Dan Connolly, Marty Walsh, and Guller Ritchie seem to be in the top four mix in all 4 of the polls. Why did you think it was unfair?
Well, I mean, obviously Larry Harmon gets to sit on the editorial meeting and says he's an op-ed guy. But, I mean, I think just brutalized her in a way that seemed unfair 4 days out, singling out one candidate to be thrashed like that.
If the quality of Guller Ritchie's campaign is a reflection of her future administration, then she does not belong anywhere in the vicinity of Mayor's fifth floor office at City Hall.
Well, how does he know about the state of her campaign?
Well, they
interviewed her.
The editorial board.
The editorial board. But I don't know. I like Larry Harmon. I thought that was tough.
I tell you, though, you do get the sense, just having done, reporting on this, as you have too, Emily, that the excitement in the minority community is with John Barros.
Yeah.
Even though Guller Ritchie is leading in the polls and may end up in the final, and I've interviewed her a couple of times, too, but and when you drive around, Roxbury and Mattapan, you see an awful lot of John Barrow signs, which means nothing in terms of
getting people out.
Yeah, the
early support was definitely for her. But.
If people don't know how they're voting, I talked to Peter Kanellis, the editorial page editor of the Globe, on 2 nights ago, whatever night it was, and we're talking, as we did with Brian McGrory the other day, about how much does an editorial matter.
Yeah.
Ordinarily, newspaper editorials, sadly to me, because they're usually thoughtful, even if you don't agree with the outcomes, are pretty useful. It seems to me they're particularly useful in a campaign that you just described, which is the vast majority of people don't know the difference between most of the candidates. So it seems to me that if we've discussed a lot, the majority minority city that we live in, is a person of color going to make it into the final? I think the fact that Guller Ritchie was seen as the most likely minority to make it into the final, that all of a sudden the liberal Boston Globe editorial page picks another person of color, Barros. It helps him, and I think it hurts her, and I know this was not their intention. My analysis, which will probably be wrong like most of my analyses, is that it probably will damage the likelihood of a person of color making it into the final.
I agree with that, too.
Well, we've talked about this before, but Marty Walsh is very popular with labor.
State rep.
He's a state rep.
Official or employee of the building trades.
And the ability to get the vote out, with labor on your side is really significant. I mean, everybody talks about this being a ground game, dragging people to the polls, making sure they're going to get to the polls. John Conley, who is a favorite, I think, at this point because of his singular focus on the schools. And if you have kids in the Boston schools, what do you want? You want better schools. And he has been the only one that stood up of all the city councilors against the teachers' contract last year. Menino didn't stand up against it either and said
and
not,
stood up to Tom Menino, yeah, the only one who had the courage to run against them.
So I think to a lot of people that's very, very attractive. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But Marty Walsh has got a lot of
people. Sound like Mary Poppins here. Which
what
is very unusual for me.
Meaning what?
But I think four or five of them would make really good mayors.
I never say things,
it's
and I totally
field.
Agree with
yeah.
you.
It's a good
field.
Yeah, that whole thing, you know, hold your nose and vote, that does not apply in this case. There are
the,
some really good,
what did you say?
Hold your nose and
yeah,
vote,
yeah,
you know, that old cliche. This is not the case.
No, I know. You emailed me this morning, Emily, and said last week you felt bad when we asked you who you're voting for, and you said you wouldn't tell us that today you wanted to announce who you're voting for, so take all the time you need. Who's
no,
that?
No, that's okay.
You sure?
No, that's all right.
Okay, fine.
But you're
right.
I might have changed my mind.
But you know, you are right, though. There's no excuse for people not being engaged in this race because there are a lot of good candidates. I mean, we haven't
That's
mentioned
true.
Them all, but, you know, Mike Ross has got this very impressive vision for, you know, the innovation, the city, Dan Conley.
Walczak stood up to the casino thing. He's a really competent
the
manager.
Casino and brought back
Rob
the whole
Consalvo.
Rob Consalvo. We had him in here.
David James Wyatt.
No,
okay,
no,
okay, fine.
Not
now,
David
don't
James.
Confuse the situation.
Sorry. Now, here we are. What is this? This is Friday. Emily is here. So, as we all know, it's time for this.
Incomprehensible.
It's out of control.
How about common sense?
Doesn't matter.
Why not?
This is the kind of thing that drives people crazy.
It's your right.
Doesn't matter.
I have absolutely no interest.
Someone asked me at the Chef's Gala last night. It's one of the first questions I was asked by a wonderful supporter. I can't remember her name. I think it was Danielle. She said, does Emily laugh when that's playing every week or is she aggravated? I said she laughs every single.
All right.
Okay, what do you have on Emily's list?
Speaking of the mayor's race. Jim and Marjorie, here are the top 10 things. This is Emily's list. The top 10 things I would do if elected mayor right off the bat.
Oh, this is great.
This is great.
All right. Number one, I would fine anyone who drops and crushes a cigarette and doesn't pick it up. By the way, I'm a big smoker's rights advocate.
I'm not.
Smoke yourselves to death.
I have no problem with it.
No buts.
Pick it up. Don't
leave
it there in there and the, you know, the sidewalks.
It's a great platform.
It's an absolute disaster. I'm fining you.
And you know what? It's unbelievable how many people you see throw lit cigarettes
including out into the road.
Yeah. And they just, aren't they ever afraid they're going to catch anything on fire?
Emily's not going to take
car.
That anymore.
Yeah.
What's number two?
Number two. I know WGBH is going to come down on me for this, but I'm going to limit the number of bike lanes and actually remove some of them from streets where they make no sense, like Huntington Avenue. You can't have a bike lane on Huntington Avenue and a trolley lane. And a parking lane and a two-car lane. That's five lanes. It's only a two-lane street.
Can I say four words to you?
What?
You should have run. Okay, number three.
Number three. I'm going to ban certain streets from parking altogether. For instance, Clarendon Street with the Copley Square exit off of Storrow Drive. Right now, after 6 o'clock, you can park on either side of that street, reducing it to essentially a half a lane. So it's not even residential. It's free parking. No parking on that one block of Clarendon Street. Wow. Sorry, folks, you're out of luck.
I don't like that. I have my roll of quarters ready on
Clarendon
Street.
No, it's free. It's free after 6 o'clock.
Oh,
that's
after 6 o'clock.
Thing.
So I'm
interlopers
sorry.
Are coming in. All right. Number four, I would make street cleaning available in all neighborhoods, not just the Back Bay and Beacon Hill. Dorchester, Roxbury, Jamaica Plain, everybody gets it in my administration.
Street cleaning?
They don't have it.
That is not
true. It's absolutely true.
Wait a second. That can't be true.
It's true. Streets in Dorchester?
So the residents in those communities?
They don't get it. They don't have it. They
do not have it. Both of us are our mouths are
agape. All right, now, I'm going to ask anyone from Peter or the Audubon Society to turn their radios off. Number five, I would poison the geese. I'll tell you, this is not an indigenous species. The nitrates are soaking into the Esplanade, you know, the Boston Common. I think the population has grown to some 75,000. It's time to.
Do you stop people?
Wait a second. There's a security guard. Are you here for Emily? The security guard. Just finish up.
Hold on. When you see people feeding the geese, do you stop them? Do you tell them, don't let your children feed those geese? This is a problem?
No, but I'll get onto that next.
Okay.
All right. Number six, I'm going to ban all plastic shopping bags. and with a particular focus on CVS because they give you way too many. They give you three for one, you know, thing of toothpaste, and they're blowing all over the streets, and
you're
they're all caught in the trees.
You're a detail woman, Emily.
All right, number seven.
Seven.
I'm going to fine snow shovel slackers, that's storekeepers and homeowners, but I'm going to encourage snow space saving. I like that.
I do
get
too.
Out your lawn chair.
I do
get
too.
Out your. If you shovel the spot, it's
you mean
okay
all
with
South
me. It's yours.
As put
mayor,
the refrigerator
I would allow
it.
That.
How many days?
Bring out the you get a 3-day leeway.
Okay,
3-day.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Limit.
You
should.
Number eight, I'm going to enforce motorcycle noise limits by stationing audio meter readers at key points along Newbury Street and other popular places for loud motorcyclists. And then I'm going to fine you when you've got those aftermarket pipes or whatever they're called that are way beyond the decibel level. Number nine. I'm going to find garbage bag cutters and force them to pick up the litter of the people who come through the alleys. And I'm ripping open the garbage cans with those knife cutters, and they rip all the stuff and they leave all the stuff there.
They do?
Oh, yes.
That's disgusting.
Number 10, I am going to get rid of all police details at construction sites. That is a waste of money. And it would not happen under
Marjorie
my administration.
Marjorie has never
you know
been
what?
Happier with a plank
you
than that one.
You are right. And you know what the thing about police details is? There's a certain number of hours that you have to buy them in blocks. So even if it's only a 45-minute job, you have to pay them for, yeah. I think it's 4 hours. I could be wrong
And what
about
are they
that.
Doing? They're staring into the holes or looking up at the cranes. They're not helping traffic. They're
stopping
not doing
crimes.
Anything. They're not stopping
okay,
crimes.
Okay, yes, they are. Now, Emily.
That is my Emily's
we're
list.
We're at a high
my 10
area
point,
here.
My
have you ever thought
plan.
Of running for office? I'm serious, by the way.
Well, who hasn't?
Well, I mean, no. So what do you think of running for? Tell the truth.
You know. What are you talking about? Everything. Mayor,
you
Senate, Congress.
It's not
Congress.
Too late. No, I'm serious.
God, I think you should do it. People yeah, really. Want straight talk. A lot of people want to poison the geese,
so.
Emily.
Okay.
This is Senator Emily Rooney with this week's Emily's List. Emily, that was an extraordinary
Thank
list.
You.
I think you have two campaign supporters.
You should go on David Letterman. I tell you.
And you're
okay.
going to be back with us on Monday to talk the mayor race on the day before. Emily. And Beat the Press tonight. Marjorie
yes.
Egan is
yes.
one of your panelists.
We are
going
to be talking about the Glenn James homeless.
Yes, we are.
Well.
Yes,
and
we are.
And the Navy yard shooting and how a bunch of people got stuff wrong, which I'm more sympathetic to than some of my colleagues. But
so
we'll be talking
I.
about that, too.
I am, too, because I've made a lot of mistakes.
Thanks so much.
I make them here on a daily basis.
She'll
okay.
be back with
Emily
us
Rooney joins us every Friday at 1 o'clock for Open Mic. And, of course, you can catch her weeknights, Greater Boston, 7 o'clock on Channel 2. And tonight is 7 o'clock, Beat the Press. When we come back, it's time for our news quiz. When the temperatures could get pretty hot as two meteorologists face off over the week's news. That conversation is next, 89.7 WGBH.
This May is race. It's complicated and complex.
WGBH News political contributor Peter Katsas.
I'm really, really impressed with the goodwill and high quality of the candidates that are running. But looking ahead, we have to get them to be specific, to talk about what they really want to change.
Get to know all the Boston mayoral candidates online at WGBHnews.org.
This program is made possible thanks to you and AAA Southern New England, helping and serving members for more than 110 years with roadside assistance, insurance and financial products, and a full-service travel agency. Details at AAA.com. AAA, membership for life. And Boston Ballet, opening its 50th anniversary season with a gift to the city, Night of Stars, a free one-night-only performance on Boston Common, Saturday, September 21st at 7 p.m. More at bostonballet.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. It's time for our weekly news quiz. Here with us in Studio 3 are Matt Noyes. He's the primetime weeknight meteorologist for NECN and happens to appear on the best show on NECN every night at about 6:20. That'd be mine. Hello there, Matt Noyes.
Hello, Jim.
Did you study all night?
I've been studying like crazy all week. Are you kidding? Not just all night.
He was in a panic. And Dave Epstein is a meteorologist for Boston.com and WGME. He's also a horticulturalist and a professor at Colby College. Good to see you, Dave. How are you?
Good to see you. Nice to be here.
What do you teach at Colby College?
Meteorology.
You're kidding.
Colby and Framingham State.
How fun.
You're putting
Colby
me up
College.
Against a professor?
Are you
it's
kidding?
Meteorology. It's not
Are
news.
Are you kidding? Oh, boy. Here we go.
I just wanted to say, I went to Colby College to visit it with one of my kids. I have never seen a more gorgeous place in my life. Somebody must have died and left them millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah, it's quite a beautiful 200 years old now.
Is it 200 years
yes.
old? It is spick and span. And they've got plants everywhere. It's gorgeous.
You
now,
know,
Matt,
do you know why?
Why is that?
Because Dave does Growing Wisdom, and every time he's there, I bet he does all the landscaping. Is that true?
No, I don't. I don't do the landscaping, but I do drawing wisdom, yes.
Yeah, okay, well, it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
And by the way, let me just say up front, because I know a lot of you are thinking that, because you may see Matt and me together most nights on TV. I did send Matt all the questions, but he said he erased them immediately prior to reading.
So I thought you sent me all the answers. Actually,
whatever it was.
Okay.
Honest, exactly.
I have to ask you a question.
I didn't send him any.
Uh-oh.
I mean, I'm sure you're sick
Uh-oh.
Of this question.
Don't say when if Marjorie you like, says don't ask if he likes working with me.
No,
please.
I wasn't. I wasn't. I just said, actually, you're tall. How tall are you?
6'4".
6'4".
That is
you look like you're taller than Jim.
Well, you know, I hang upside down every night just to try and get the extra half inch.
Really?
You do that? Okay. Warren Feldman does that too. Is that really true? Do you do that?
No,
he doesn't.
So did you play basketball in high school?
Oh,
no, I tripped over my own feet. I was on the rowing team.
So did you get a lot of teasing about that?
About tripping over my own feet?
Playing basketball?
You know, I played. No, because I was on the rowing team instead. So, you know.
Marjorie, if you say, how's the air up there? I'm leaving the studio. This line of questioning is amazing. Okay, we're going to start. Because people think I've got a thing with Matt Noyes, you ask him questions, I'll ask Dave the questions. How's that? Is that fair enough? So start with Matt Noyes.
Okay. You ready, Matt?
By the way, this radio thing is great. I can't believe I'm doing this shirtless right now. This is
you and Vladimir Putin, when he did the quiz, he was shirtless.
This is way better than TV. I'm sorry, Marjorie. Go ahead.
You know, I just have to tell you a quick story.
Yeah. About being shirtless. Go ahead, Marjorie.
No, about being tall. I met Dave Cowens once when I was a great Celtic ball player at a cocktail party.
This is an unbelievable story.
And, you know,
a Hall of Famer, by the way.
Hall of Famer. Sure. And you know, I thought to myself, don't ask him how tall he is. Don't ask him how tall he is, because I'm sure he's sick of being asked how tall he is. And it was like, I couldn't help myself. Suddenly I said, how tall are you, Dave Cowens?
Like Tourette's.
He just looked at me. And he walked away.
Oh, no way.
Good for him.
I was devastated.
So you never found out?
I know. He's 6'9".
Oh, I was going to say we could Wikipedia that.
Yeah, we could check it out. Okay. Anyway,
all right,
ready?
Sorry. Yes, I'm ready.
Okay. A Boston actor was told by his film studio not to look at online commentary about his new role. He snuck a look at some comments anyway.
I said, just don't use the internet for a couple of days. And I said, I handle. I'm tough. Yeah, I'm very tough.
Boston,
so I saw the announcement. I look on this thing. I look down the first comment. Yeah. It's like, no!
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Okay. Who is this person whose voice you just heard, and what famous role will he be playing?
It's got to be either Affleck or Damon if it's a Boston actor. It sounded more like Affleck. We'll go with Affleck.
Very good.
And he's got to be Whitey, right? Or something about maybe he's the FBI guy going after Whitey. I don't know. But he's in a Whitey movie.
He
gets half the points.
Yeah, okay.
And
right.
Dave, you can steal the second hand. What's the role that he's talking about that a lot of people are saying he is not fit for?
It's the guy that was Whitey's second guy.
That would be wrong. What's the answer, Marjorie?
Well, he's going to be Batman. He's going to be Batman, but he's also directing a TV pilot based on the life of another infamous Bostonian. That, of course, would be Whitey Bulger.
That's what we were thinking.
Yeah, and they're putting together a movie. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
A movie called Whitey. Yeah.
What is it?
Pearl Street Productions, I think, is his thing.
Really?
Answer the question.
All right.
Now, so you have a half a point, Matt, if you know what I mean.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's our pleasure. Now, here's a question for you, Dave. You ready?
Go ahead.
Thank you. The answer is yes or no, not go ahead. Yes. Now, here it is. Dave, what Mark Wahlberg accomplishment is Celeb TV talking about here? Listen.
After 42 years, Mark Wahlberg can finally add another accomplishment to his resume.
That's right. The actor received his in June. So what inspired him after all these years? Let's just say that he had four little reasons. His kids. I didn't want the kids saying, you didn't do it, so why do I need it? He tells People magazine.
What is the accomplishment that's being talked about on Celeb TV? What's the accomplishment?
He got his high school diploma.
That is exactly
good
right.
Job.
Very,
very
nicely
good.
Done. By the way, I love that story. You know, because he obviously doesn't need it. Isn't it great?
Yeah.
And the guy says, I actually listened to part of the interview, and Wahlberg said he studies on set when he's traveling. It's really a pretty great thing, no?
I love seeing anybody go back to school to learn more, to advance more. It's great.
You know, it's beautiful. He also brought Ted, the teddy bear, to the graduation, which is really...
Never let him go, did he?
Really, you love that movie, Tell the Truth. How great is that movie?
Yeah, you're my Thunder Buddy, Jim.
Oh, my God.
Jim, no. I didn't know you were his Thunder Buddy.
Yeah, only when the storms come in, he calls me up.
Next question.
Thunder Bunny or...
Buddy, not Bunny.
No, Buddy.
Okay,
buddy.
I wasn't sure.
Next question for Matt Noyes from Marjorie.
Okay, ready, Matt?
I'm ready.
Who is Stephen Colbert talking about in this clip?
Happy anniversary, nation. You may not remember, but I do. 5 years ago today, filed for bankruptcy, triggering the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. Bet you thought I'd forgotten.
But I even got you a cake. It's actually a bunch of cake, some fresh, some spoiled, bundled into a larger cake derivative. All right? Now, fair warning, there might be some poop in there, too.
Yeah.
But it's mostly cake.
Now, did you guys hear about the big party that the Lehman Brothers had? They had this 5-year reunion party just the other night.
This is not true.
At B.B. King's in New York City. And it said LEH, which was their stock identifier. You know, LEH rocks. And it was all the Lehman Brothers people getting back together, which, by the way, it's my answer, Lehman Brothers. But it was all the people getting back together and having a big party to celebrate the fact that they're all still doing their jobs, just at different banks now.
We mentioned, yeah. We listed the 4 multi-million dollar homes that Dick Fuld, who was the head of Lehman Brothers, disgusting. Now owns, and the $20 million he sold his penthouse in Manhattan for, with a mere profit of $4.8 million.
He wasn't at the party, by the way.
Is that true?
That's true. He was not at the
party. We also got an email from a woman who used to work for Lehman Brothers.
Heartbreaking.
Who said she had been expecting, and she was older, you know, late 50s, yeah. early 60s. She said she'd been expecting a $2,500 a month pension. Her pension now is $137, and it's from the government, not from Lehman Brothers.
Well, he leaves with $10 million, no charges, no nothing. So, Dave Epstein, you're being crushed. The score is 1.5 for Matt to only 1 for you.
Yeah,
this is your chance to redeem yourself. You ready?
Let's go.
Okay, here we go.
Yes.
The old saying goes, no shirt, no shoes, no service. Here's Conan O'Brien on how Starbucks is adding one more rule to that list.
What else is going on? The CEO of Starbucks is asking customers to stop bringing into the coffee chain stores. Yeah. Meanwhile, Dunkin' Donuts said there is nothing you can bring in here that's more dangerous than what we serve.
Okay, the question is, Dave, what can customers no longer bring into Starbucks? What would that be?
They can't bring guns.
And that is exactly
right. They're just being asked not to bring them into the store.
Can you believe that Starbucks was permitted? And this is not let's not get into a Second Amendment fight here. They were allowing people to bring concealed weapons into their store. Is that a little troubling or not?
Can you imagine standing next to someone
you don't bring a gun to the coffee shop every morning?
AK-47 next to you when you're trying to get your coffee in the morning? I have a nervous breakdown.
No, there's only a few companies that actually prohibit it. Starbucks isn't prohibiting it. They're just saying, we'd like it if you didn't. But they're not going to put their folks, the baristas, are not going to say, hey, you have a gun.
They're not going to
arrest
you.
Could you please leave?
Well, I wish they would. Hey, let me ask you guys something before we go to the next round. By the way, it's 2-1.5. 2 for Dave Epstein, 1.5 for my buddy Matt Noisy, my Thunder buddy, as he said. Now, Gore Vidal, one of the great quotes I learned from Marjorie is, Gore Vidal, the great novelist, was asked once, when one of your friends has a book that totally is trashed by the critics, how do you feel? And he says, my heart leaps with joy. So the question is, when a fellow meteorologist really blows it, I'll start with you, Dave, first, really blows it big time, do you commiserate with the man or woman, or do you say, great, I got it right, he or she got it wrong? Tell the truth.
No, I think you commiserate. I mean, we definitely, and if you follow any of us on Twitter especially, there's a lot of conversation that goes on.
So it's like a fraternity kind of thing.
Absolutely, and we're definitely supportive. And, you know, we see the bad tweets going to each other, like, oh, you know, and sometimes I'll send the comments to my fellow meteorologists and say, you wouldn't believe what someone trashed me on because, you know, I was off by 15 minutes. I said it would start snowing at 2. It started at 1:45, and, you know, people are mad at that.
So you, on the other hand, I know, are much more evil than that.
Sure.
You luxuriate in the bad misfortune.
Yeah, I'm just a jerk. You know, no, I'm just kidding. I am a competitive person, so I always go out. I want to have the best forecast. I want to make sure that mine is the best. At the same time, I will tell you this. We rise and fall as a field, as it goes in a lot of fields. So, for example, there have been plenty of times that I've had either a bad or a good forecast, but I'm thinking of ones, for example, you might nail it. Somebody says, wow, you know, you weren't calling for this at all, because they kind of group us all into one big lump, you know. So we rise and fall as a field. We got to support each other. And we're all family, you know.
Now, I remember years ago interviewing Dick Albert, who used to be the weatherman, or the meteorologist, I should say, at WCVB.
Oh, sure. Who doesn't know
and
Dickie?
He talked about how when he was a little boy, he'd race out to his backyard with a little ruler and he'd measure all the snow. And he was like a real news geek at like 5 years old in kindergarten. He was always doing the forecast and all this kind of stuff. So were you both like little weather geeks as little kids?
My parents would say, go to bed. The snow doesn't look any different from the back window than it does from the front window. Stop running around looking at it. And I was known as the weather guy in college, the payphone there. I used to every day at 6:15, I'd call the meteorologist and give them the Waterville up where Colby is. I'd give them the temperature, and sometimes kids would go to the phone and make believe they were going to grab it. I'm like, no, I'm getting my weather. I have to give my report. So total geek.
Now the question is, Dave, are you still like that?
Absolutely.
When the snow falls? See, and that's what's changed with me, believe it or not. And I'm kind of outside the fold on this one, which is that probably ever since my little guy, my 3-year-old, came along, and I'm driving him all over the place, and now when the snow's flying, I won't tell you the words that are coming out of my mouth, but I'm saying, oh, here we go again. So I still enjoy it. I enjoy forecasting it. It's lost a little of the luster as time has gone
on. It has.
Yeah.
Can I make a serious comment here, and then we'll get back to the frivolity of the quiz? Matt doesn't like this when I bring it up, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know, for those of us who turn on the weather, often the most important part of the news, and then totally ridicule or savage weather people or meteorologists when they're wrong. After, for example, the tornadoes in Western Mass, when you and I, Marjorie, went out and broadcast live from out there, I read email that was sent to him that he wouldn't read on air. And I'm sure, Dave, you've had these experiences too, where town managers were writing in saying, Matt saved lives because of his forecasts. It is amazing. Again, we take it in a light way because whether what you're going to wear, how you're going to feel, that's right. It's a really important and serious profession. And that's
Jim,
all
that envelope of cash.
No, I'm serious. I know you don't like that, but
it's very nice.
Okay, next question for Matt Noyes, who needs a half a point to draw into a tie.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Earlier this week, a reporter filed this report out of Italy. What colossus is she talking about?
Spanning 952 feet long and weighing more than 100,000 tons, about the same as 10 Eiffel Towers, they began the epic challenge of lifting the mighty from its watery grave.
Once a mighty cruise ship, now a floating barge, a sinking barge, the Costa Concordia.
Ooh, yeah. That is right.
Wasn't that an unbelievable story?
Unbelievable, yes.
Yes, unbelievable. 32 people killed.
Yeah. And still people, they still have people
two
who are
people,
there
yeah.
that they've got to now get out.
Yeah, is it two people, I think, that were trapped underneath. In there?
Is this successful so far? Because when I read when they started the righting of the ship, if that's the proper expression, they said if they blow this, these coral reefs
it's
that
up
are... That, oh, it's up
it's
and
up.
It's, so
up.
They did it. They
yeah.
pulled
yeah.
it off. That's, what yeah. a task. It's
but just to be scrap. I mean, that's the amazing right. thing. It's not like they're pulling it up to put it back out. They're pulling it up so they can scrap it.
Yeah.
Well, but they can't leave it on the. I mean, they can't leave it there forever, right? I mean,
right, but it's just going into scrap.
Yeah.
Does anybody know what happened to the captain that was jumping into the lifeboat and the Coast Guard was screaming him to get back with your ship?
He's still waiting for his trial.
Yeah, he's still waiting for his trial. Okay.
Manslaughter and abandoning ship.
He could be doing some jail time.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, question for you, Dave Epstein. You ready? You can plunge back into the lead if that's proper verb. This depiction of a father-son relationship kind of sounds like a Neil Simon, Woody Allen knockoff, but it's not. What exactly is going on in this clip, which went viral this week?
I'm and I'll never forget that conversation with my dad.
That's me.
Where I had to come out and tell him.
Wait for this.
That I was a Massachusetts liberal.
And he's proud of it.
Dad's in the Tea Party.
Damn right.
Okay, what is that? And has gone viral well beyond the borders of the particular place that it was intended for. What's the answer?
So it's a political ad. He's running for Congress. He's a liberal. His dad's a Tea Party person.
Judges, is that enough? Or do we need yes or no? It's Carl
That's
Shortino.
That's pretty good, Dave. That's a hard one.
He is running in the race, the Democratic race, to succeed Ed Markey. And by the way, Marjorie, who will be doing a televised debate on October 8th at 6 o'clock? In that particular race. Who would
well,
that be?
Well, we know it's you, Jim. Otherwise, you would not have brought
not
it up.
Brought
exactly.
It up.
Thank you very much.
Say the same thing, Marjorie.
Now, gentlemen, Dave Epstein and Matt Noyes, since both of you are weathermen, we're going to ask you questions about the Belgian electro-pop band, which is called The Weathermen.
Excellent.
Is that okay?
Yeah, they're my favorite. I was listening to them
I'm
on the
sure,
way over.
Yeah. Yeah.
First question for
Matt.
And then
Matt we're going to get a weekend forecast before this
yeah,
is
over. Yeah,
that's
that.
Very
right.
important,
okay.
too. Okay. Question one. Is this to Matt again, or is
yeah,
this
it
to
is
Dave?
To Matt.
Okay, here we go, Matt. This is multiple choice.
Oh, boy.
What inspired this band's name? A, they named themselves after the American hip-hop band, The Weathermen. B, they named themselves after Bob Dylan's song, Subterranean Homesick Blues, in which a line goes, quote, you don't need a weatherman to tell which way the wind blows. Or C, their original name was The Brethren, but at the first show, the MC introduced them as The Weathermen.
I like C. I'm going to go with C.
No, that would be wrong.
Oh, well,
sorry.
What is their name, actually? I missed the name.
It's the Weathermen.
Oh, it is the Weathermen.
Yes.
I was asking you about them.
I still exactly. would go with C.
Now, Dave, you can steal this thing. Do you know
what
it is?
That was a better answer, really.
I'm going to be guessing. I got a 50-50 shot. I'll say B. B.
That would be.
That's correct.
Hey, all right.
That's correct. After Bob Dylan's song, Subterranean Homesick Blues.
Now, let me ask you something, Marguerite.
Yes.
Where did you feel that you were entitled to edit the line from Bob Dylan's song? Do you know that you changed the words in one of the most famous songs?
That's why I didn't
in
get
the
it.
History
there you go.
Of
you would have got
popular
it.
Music.
What did I say?
That
no,
threw me
don't
off.
Want me to tell which way the wind blows?
Well, yeah, I mean that's
sorry.
Not the way he wrote
sorry,
it. I mean,
Jim.
It's just not.
I don't think
right.
most people notice that. Maybe
well,
they
some
did.
People did notice it.
Okay, I'm
okay.
Sorry,
now here's the thing. Now, Dave, enough? We're going to do. We're going to change the rules here because that's what we always do.
Okay.
We're going to change. If you get this right, you get the points.
Okay.
But on this particular question, if you get it wrong, you lose points. Okay, there. Thank you.
It's big.
It's for you, Matt. Okay, here it is. The Weathermen was made up, as I'm sure you know, of two musicians, Chuck B. and Chuck and Jimmy Joe Snark III. After they released the release of their second album, Chuck B. decided to change his name. What did Chuck B. change his name to? There are three choices. Chuck U. I'm not laughing because it's right or wrong. It's just rather funny.
No, of course
B not. Is Chuck. Thank you, Matt. Or C is Ground Chuck. To which of those three names did Chuck B. change his name? What's the answer?
I have no idea. Ground Chuck.
That would be wrong. Now, it's either A or B, Chuck U, or just plain old Chuck, Matt. What do you think?
I didn't even understand half the names or all the names, frankly, were in the question.
What's
so I'm just going to go with B. We'll just
B is exactly right. He changed
I knew that.
The
Thank
name
you. Yes.
to Chuck.
God, I
okay.
wish he'd changed it to Ground Chuck. That would have been
no.
better. Do
I don't even know who that is.
Exactly.
Yeah. No idea.
It's better that way.
Okay.
Now, here's the last question.
Last question.
I don't know how do we do this exactly. Now, you ask it of Matt. We're going to do the same thing with you.
Okay.
If you get this right, you apparently win, I'm told by the judges.
Yeah.
If you get it wrong, Dave Epstein wins.
In other words, we're running short on time.
No, we're not, actually. It's our last question.
Okay, all right.
Go ahead, Marjorie.
The Weathermen's first hit was the song Poison.
Of course.
What was the catchy chorus that made this song a hit? A, tell me the truth, I'll tell you a lie, my name is Poison. B, no existential pain, no existential gain, you aren't insane, you're poison. Or C, mermaid's blood runs through your veins, what runs through my veins? Poison.
Now, again, before you answer,
yeah.
if you get it correct,
uh-huh.
you go to NECN this afternoon to appear with me at about 6:20 this afternoon,
yeah.
a proud winner.
Yeah.
If you get this wrong,
a defeated
Dave
loser.
Epstein has crushed you. Yes.
It's all right, but you know
good.
What? I forecast Dave Epstein crushing me last night.
You did.
I?
As
it's
a matter
true.
Of fact, he did.
See,
on
the
air,
Poison
he did
song I know, by the way, is That Girl is Poison. Different generation.
That is
here,
exactly.
Yeah,
okay,
thanks.
What's
I'm
going to
go with B, just out of the blue.
Well, this
no.
is a very sad moment.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Crushed.
Now, if I may, just to be clear, Matt is a friend of mine, my sense is you really meant to say A. Did you not? Is that?
Well, actually, this is, it's funny you say that.
You juxtapose them.
Yes, I was doing B for Browdy because I really support you and I want your last name initial to be out there
yeah.
as much as possible.
Judges,
I would have done A.
I don't know. I
no,
guess not.
Then
okay,
I'm
fine.
That,
congratulations,
no.
Dave Epstein.
Congratulations,
you are this week's
Dave.
Congratulations,
winner.
Dave. Now, can we have the weather forecast, please?
Take
Dave,
it away.
Dave's the winner. He better give the weather
forecast. Yeah, you start and then we'll see if Matt agrees. What's the weather forecast for the weekend, please?
Well, it looks good, especially tomorrow morning. And then we got some showers coming in during the middle part of the day. They should be out of here by the end of the day. And then Sunday, cooler, drier, sunshine. So kind of a couple of hours of showers during tomorrow. I wouldn't cancel any plans. It's not going to be a washout.
Okay, Matt Noyes, what do you
oh,
think
see,
of that?
And this is where you get the differing forecasts
yeah,
right here. But we team together. So I would say tomorrow you start out fine. I agree, clouds move in, chance of a shower. I'm worried that the rain Saturday night is going to linger on Sunday. So I actually advised an event I was supposed to be hosting outside on Sunday to postpone until next weekend. So I would make Saturday, I think we both agree, make Saturday your outdoor day if you can, and we'll see what happens.
You know, we only have a minute left. Yeah, I've asked you this before, but I ask you on air. One of the beauties of what we do for a living, Marjorie and I, is even if you're wrong about something, it's much more amorphous, for lack of a better word. If you're wrong, you're sort of out there naked. Do you have some trepidation, starting with you, Matt Noyes, for 20 seconds?
Sure.
When you're a major forecast about something that matters.
Absolutely.
Are you nervous?
Oh, every time.
Are you really?
Of course. It's your name on the line. And, I mean, it's the last thing you want to do is make a bad forecast, blow people's plans. And you're blowing your own plans, too. No, it's every time.
How about you, Dave Epstein?
Same thing. I won't. If I make a forecast for a big snowstorm and it's overnight, I will not sleep. I'll be up every hour looking out the window, measuring, looking at the radar. I just want it to be right. It's my name on the line.
Can I tell you something? I'm wrong every day. I haven't slept better in my life. It's really
look
that's why you're not a meteorologist.
Exactly.
You look so good, you know?
Thank you. Hey, Matt Noyes from NECN and Dave Epstein from WGME and Boston.com. It's great to see you both. Matt
Thank
Noyes
you.
Will be on with me tonight at about 6:20, and we'll be reading you in Boston.com. Thanks,
nice to
gentlemen.
Be here. Great
to see
you.
Thank you, guys,
thank you
both for coming in, and thank you all for listening to another day, another week of Boston Public Radio. On Monday, Emily Rooney and Peter Katzis will be here to do an analysis of the Boston mayor's race, because the election is on Tuesday. Thank you to our crack team here, Chelsea, Will, Amanda, John, and Alan. This show is a production of WGBH. I am Marjorie Egan.
And I am Jim Brody. We want to say one more time, it's a year away, but it's sold out this year. The Taste of WGBH Food and Wine Festival. We went last night to the Chef's Gala. It was one of the great events ever. Make sure you don't miss it next year. Marjorie, have a wonderful weekend.
You have a wonderful weekend, Jim.
We'll see you on Monday, guys.
Thanks for listening.